Support for Boston Public Radio comes from Newbury Court, a full-service retirement community in Concord, Massachusetts. Newbury Court is committed to creating active, independent lifestyles for persons 62 and over. More at newburycourt.org.
I'm Jim Browdy. Today on Boston Public Radio, live from the Boston Public Library, we're bracing for extreme cold weather this weekend. How are you handling it? We'll open the lines. Then Dr. Kazen Gergen-Barnett is back at the BPL to discuss the Biden administration's decision to end the federal public health emergency for COVID. What does it mean for you? We'll also talk about maternal mental health and those controversial new guidelines for childhood obesity. Plus, she'll take a call or two.
I'm Marjorie Egan. Boston Globe business columnist Shirley Leung will join us on a new Beacon Hill push for more pay and salary transparency in Massachusetts. Plus, a who's who list of the most influential Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in Boston. And one of them is Shirley. All that ahead on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. Good morning, Jim.
Hi there, Marjorie.
We are broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library, and we are streaming at youtube.com/GBH News.
That's correct.
Do I sound very loud to you?
You sound odd, but I'm glad you're here. So after weeks of naive griping about it being too warm, winter on steroids is finally upon us, at least for the next day or so. We're headed in this, I don't even know what it means, polar vortex-driven cold snap that's going to hit us today and tomorrow before returning to the 40s on Sunday and 50s next week. Meteorologists say we may even break records for how cold it gets, potentially the coldest it's been in decades here. Some reports say it could feel as cold as minus 30 or more with a wind chill on Saturday. Ski mountains are shutting down lifts, not all of them, by the way. The Boston Public Schools are closed for today. Warming centers, including the Boston Public Library, are open, so please use them. We're opening the phone and text lines at 877-301-8970. What steps are you taking to stay warm, to take care of yourself? Are you buying into this cold snap talk, or are you ready for it to be blisteringly cold so you can bundle up with a warm drink, have a good excuse not to go outside? It's our hope that as you're listening to us, you are somewhere warm. Again, there are warming centers across the city, including library branches and the central branch where we are. If you're not in a warm place and you'd like to be, we've got an extra incentive, Marjorie, for people who come here. Free small coffee, tea, or hot chocolate on us at the Newsfeed Cafe. Come on down. That's right. Free today. Thanks to the people at GBH and the Newsfeed Cafe for making this happen. In the interim, give us a call or text us at 877-301-8970. Now, we've never done this free warm drink thing before.
No, it was your idea, Jim.
How many of you are here because we're offering you a free drink?
Nobody.
A couple of honest people.
Oh, and are all people.
The rest of you lying? You are. Actually, they're
well,
apparently not.
Listen, I'm surprised anybody came out today because it's so freezing cold. I mean, it was like brutal just getting into your car.
That's a really good way to get people here, by the way, Marjorie. I'm really surprised people go outside at all. No, actually, you should come. We've got great music a little bit later in the show. We have terrific guests today. And I'll tell you, I'd go anywhere for a free cup of coffee.
I revise my statement.
877-301-8970. I don't know if this is too intimate, but since we're talking about how you stay warm, Marjorie shared with me today, what are you wearing under your outer clothing today?
I bought these years ago from L.L. Bean. Mm-hmm. They're silk long underwear.
Oh.
And the beauty of them is that they're very sheer, and you can wear them under your jeans or anything else you happen to be wearing, but they keep you very warm because we're standing near the windows.
I'm standing particularly
near the window, and I don't want to be down here freezing, and that's why I wore my silk long underwear today.
I thought you told me you were too warm.
It is warmer. I thought it would be colder than it is. I'm waiting for it to get colder.
Huh. And I, just so, since you exposed it, I'm wearing nothing under my clothing. I thought I'd share that. It's a technique I use to stay warm. In any case, 877-301-8970. We know there is a serious side to this. And we say again, if you are not in a warm place, come to a library branch, come to the central library, go to one of the city's warming centers. There are other warming centers. They're on their websites. Make sure you take care of yourself and obviously take care of people who need your help. But in addition to that, if you've got a little trick of the trade or technique to stay warm, how do you dress on a day like this? How do you deal with what could be? I mean, it is dangerous cold come later tonight or I guess mostly overnight and a little bit of tomorrow. 877-301-8970.
Wind chill is expected to dip to at least 30 degrees below zero.
That's cold.
Much of Massachusetts, even colder in places like Worcester Hills, higher elevation, obviously in the Berkshires, the National Weather Service says. And you know what I was surprised? I didn't know. This is going to be the coldest day in Boston for 7 years. Since Valentine's Day of 2016.
I think that's wrong. Well, the reason I didn't say that is because from what I read last night, it could be the coldest day in decades, not just 7 years.
Well, so, it may make it even colder than that. I'm just reading for the National Weather Service what they said. But anyway, you can get frostbitten really quickly,
too. You can, depending on the temperature.
The other thing, pets.
Pets. Let's talk about pets for a second before we get to the calls and the texts.
Well, if it's too cold for you, it's too cold for your pet. That's
basically
what they
say. It's a good rule of thumb.
And you don't really think that's true because your pets are covered with hair. Sometimes they're
not.
They're covered with fur. And fur dogs do not keep as warm as fur dogs, which is why you see so many fur dogs without coats and so many hair dogs with coats. But you should really take your dogs only out for really quick walks in this weather because they can get really, really cold. And you should bring your outdoor cats inside, even though they're covered with fur. Bring them inside. And listen to this. I didn't even think about this.
Is this the car warming deal?
Yeah.
That's frightening.
If your car has been running and it's warm, you should check before you start your car again under the hood for any cats, outdoor cats perhaps, not taken inside that may have snuggled up near your warm engine.
Well, also, what's the name of that woman? Who's the woman who used to work for with us who went to Colorado who talked about rats? Rebecca. Thank you, Jamie.
Eating.
Rebecca had rats eating the wires.
The wires.
So if you're worried about the health of the rat in your community, also you have to do something about that. Now, it turns out I may have been right. The Boston Globe, thank you, one of our colleagues, says the record low of -2 was set back in so-and-so. It's blocked. It's going to be shattered. There's actually an outside chance that Logan reaches 5 below 0 by midnight, which would tie the record for today, Marjorie, set in 1881.
Wow.
What do you think of that?
That's pretty depressing. You know what the beauty is, though?
No, I don't.
As cold as it's going to be today and tomorrow, it's going to be warm again on Sunday. It's going to be 40 degrees, so it's not
and
so 50 bad.
And 50 next week, too.
Yeah, if you knew it was going to go on for a week, it would be very depressing. But if you can get through it for like a day or 2 days. Maria from Wisconsin, thank you for calling.
Wisconsin, really? Hi, Maria. What's up?
Hi, how are you today?
Better than you, I have a feeling. What's going on in Wisconsin?
Well, my husband Gary from Wisconsin calls.
Oh, I know. We know Gary from the phone. Great. Yeah. It's nice to meet you, Maria. Welcome.
Yes. Nice to meet you. Well, we're doing pretty good up here. I mean, it's -9.
Oh, it's nothing.
It's sunny.
It's pretty good, yeah.
My husband is stoking the fire down in the cellar. I'm in shorts. And it gets to be 90 degrees here in the house because my husband is—he's wonderful and keeping us warm.
That's very nice.
My cats are on the floor, staying warm from the floor, and they're old, so of course the bones get cold, so they're staying nice and toasty too.
Yeah.
So life is good.
Well, let me tell you, Maria, to make it even better, since we'd love to hear from you and Gary from Wisconsin. If you guys hop in your car and drive to the Boston Public Library, we'll get you a small hot chocolate on the house. So consider that.
Okay.
Talk to Gary.
Maria,
get back to us.
I have a question for you.
Sounds wonderful. And we're on our way.
Okay,
great.
You're out there in Wisconsin where it's pretty cold, minus 12 degrees. That's really cold.
Nice.
I used to live in Burlington, Vermont. It's warming up in Burlington, Vermont because of global warming.
Yeah.
But it used to be unbearable. I remember there's a whole stretch where it never got above zero for 6 weeks. But I found that you get accustomed to the cold after a while. You think that's true?
You're absolutely right. We've been here since 2018.
Yeah.
And the first year we moved here, we had a lot of snow. And it does get really cold, but after a while, you're just accustomed to it. You're used to it. And when you come inside from outside, you just think, like, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really funny how quickly the body can adjust.
Wait a second. I'm sorry, Maria. I mean, we're thrilled to hear from you for the first time, and we're very fond of your husband, Gary. Getting used to minus 12 degrees is oxymoronic. That is just not possible.
I just came inside from outside, putting a piece of mail in the mailbox.
Yeah.
And it is very cold. Your eyes start to tear. You start to feel your fingers turn numb.
I love that feeling.
But you know, you just take the you just inhale all that fresh air, and it's wonderful.
That's beautiful. Maria, yeah, thanks
thank
for the call.
For the call.
By the way, that Globe update that I read a couple of minutes ago, which showed that we could break decades-old record, is actually from GBH's weather guy in the Globe.
Dave Epstein.
Dave Epstein.
Yeah. I love him.
He's great. He's on with Paris and Jeremy, I think, every morning, and he's great.
I love weather reports. And that's one of the most popular things on TV, isn't it? You worked at a news station for a long time. What is the big hit?
Well, when I was at
the
NECN, horrible weather.
That's right.
When there was horrible weather, and we did practically 24/7 weather, I'm embarrassed to say we had the highest ratings by far that we ever, Matt Noyes, Tim Kelly, all those people. It was just really incredible.
Now, Dan,
I'm sorry.
Dan from Somerville says he has a trick, Jim.
What is it?
My trick to go stay warm is to sleep on wet sheets. Wrong season.
Exactly. That's
okay.
Marjorie's
Why
trick.
Is he telling that? Because that's what I do in the summertime to keep cool when it's really hot outside, is to put not the wet sheets, but the damp sheets. But he is correct. It is the warm season. Here's Paul from Worcester.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing.
I hate that.
I'm like a many-layered L.L. Bean advertisement. Paul also wants to know how your car batteries are doing in the industry.
I can't believe, you know who texted me about that this morning? I think mockingly, Shirley Leung.
Electric.
Said,
electric,
how's your Tesla going to do today? I don't know what the answer to the question
Jim
is.
Jim and his Tesla.
Okay, I didn't
a
mean
man
it.
And his Tesla.
Okay, fine. Now, Steve from Gloucester, I think, makes the most important news. He texts us and says, George Santos, as you know, invented the ham warmer. 877-301-8970. We'll get more to George Santos with Sue O'Connell in an hour
Those
so,
are great.
Sure.
Those are great. The little hand and feet warmers that you can get at CVS, or you can get them in all these REI-type stores.
Stick them right in there.
Yeah, you do, in your feet. People wear those in the wintertime, obviously, to go skiing.
Can I tell you something? By the way, the most important thing we're going to impart today, not to Janita, is take care of your pets. I mean, really, and old people obviously do that. But can I say something that is going to sound so nice? I've never in my life, till about maybe 5 years ago, ever dressed appropriately for winter. You know what the key is? I mean, this may not be something. Gloves and something around your neck. End of discussion. And
that
I'm not
correct.
Into this hat deal, by the way. I know hats supposed to keep the heat in, that sort of thing. Well, gloves and a scarf are the key to salvation, Marjorie.
Yeah, and hats. Then hats do matter. You need to get the big boy hat. But I remember going to you. We were covering the presidential campaign up in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And we were going out to cover this. Hillary Clinton was speaking this back in 2016. You had like a sport coat on.
I did.
It was about 5 degrees. I had my boots.
It was actually
I had
a cashmere blazer.
Oh, cashmere blazer.
Thank
okay.
You.
I had my parka and my boots. So I was ready to go. And you had this ridiculous outfit on. You were indeed freezing, and Jim didn't have his boots on, so he couldn't get up the hill.
Now, by the way, you know what, Marjorie? Let me just tell you something.
It's only like a 5-foot
Marjorie hill. Says to me before
Basically,
the show
Jim
today.
Behind.
Marjorie says to me before the show today, if you tell one of the stories you've told 400 times on the radio today, I'm going to scream. And so what does Marjorie do? She tells the story for the 500th time about the fact that she, and who was our camera guy that day who's great?
Oh, gosh.
I can't remember who it was. But whatever. We had a great camera guy. Marjorie and our camera guy.
That's right.
Run over the hill to get into the Hillary thing. I was not able to make it to the Hillary thing because I could not climb up the hill.
Yep. He was outside in a sport coat in 5 degrees.
I was in a cashmere blazer, actually. I was not
blazer.
In a sport
okay.
coat.
Okay.
And
Ellen from
let me tell you, I looked really good in
this
that.
This is a spectacular
it's a
looking
black
blazer.
Black cashmere blazer.
That's
Thank
right.
you.
Ellen from Westport. Thank you for calling.
Hey, I don't know if you'll get good reception because I'm in my phone, in my car.
We're perfect.
Sound good.
Happy. Hey, I'm glad I can deal with the cold. I just put on a coat that I don't want to wear because I don't like coats. And I put on my hat, which I have now, and I have a nice scarf. But I am glad that we aren't having snow.
That's right.
How do you like that? No snow.
Yeah. You've had it with the snow, Ellen. Well, I get that, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. Thank you very much for the call.
By the way, the camera person was Lance. I just realized.
Lance.
It was Lance who was
Lance.
The brilliant camera
That's
person
right.
that day. By the way, here's another great tip, and thank you. It's unsigned. P, as in P-E-E. If you empty your bladder, you'll get warmer, he says, or she says, because there's less volume to heat in your body. What do you think of that?
I don't know, Jim.
I think so.
I haven't done the research there. But somebody said that it's Cuddle Duds Day. Do you know what Cuddle Duds are?
No, I do not.
But they're more reasonable than L.L. Bean silk liners. I haven't heard. I think Juliette Kime showed up in a Cuddle Dud yesterday, didn't she? It was that furry thing she had on.
Can I tell you something else that's really important? I know we're not getting ice or snow, which is fabulous, and it's not even forecast for the next week or so. The key to that, I was talking to a friend last night, yak tracks are the key to life in icy and snowy winter. Do you know what yak tracks are?
They are. You've worn them several times.
What do you do? What do you do
with
them?
You put them on the bottom of your shoes, and they're like little spiked...
Studs kind of thing.
Spiked or studded snow tires almost that with little springs on them. And they have been the key to your success in the snow, Jim. That's very impressive. Here's a good point. It's cold, but it's not that cold. What this texter finds depressing is the thought of these 50-degree days in February. And that is kind of weird. And the fluctuations are very weird, too. And
extremes,
of course,
that's what they said.
Climate extremes. It's not just climate warming. It's climate extremes and climate disruption. 877-301-8970. We're down for the Boston Public Library, where we have free coffee and free hot chocolate and free tea in honor of this very, very cold day. If you want to come down here and get warm in the Boston Public Library, which is one of the warming centers that's open all around the city for people who do have heat issues so they can get out of the cold. And we're going to talk with Shirley Young later on. Remember a couple of weeks ago, she did the great reporting from down at South Station.
I do.
And found that they were throwing people out of South Station
homeless
after it
people.
Closed.
Yep.
And this wasn't supposed to happen when the temperatures got below 32 degrees. Well, I think that a lot of people who have no place to go tonight will be thrilled to know that they can at least get into the warm South Station when it's going to be tonight, like minus, what, 10 degrees?
Well, we found out about that thanks to your question to Governor Healey. And Governor Healey called the legendary doctor, Jim O'Connell. Why? Because of Shirley's column. So Shirley really got action for people who need action. It's pretty great. 877-301-8970. We're talking about how you're coping with this horrible cold to come. What?
This is Dickie weather, says one of our texters. Dickie.
Explain what a Dickie is. It sounds
a
inappropriate.
It's like when you didn't want to wear a turtleneck. Mm-hmm. You know, this was very popular. And when Jim and I were young, you would wear this little mock turtleneck over your
it's like
head.
A bib. It's like a...
And it had a little bib underneath, so you wouldn't have to wear the entire turtleneck. It was a ridiculous thing, but people used to wear them to the high school dances. Anita in the car, thank you for calling.
Anita, I had dozens of Dickies, in case you were thinking about it. But go ahead. I'm sure you don't want to think about it. But go ahead, Anita. What's up with you?
I'm driving into Boston for a class at Italy.
Oh, right down the street.
Yeah, is it? I don't know. I really don't go to Boston too often.
Yeah, it's on Boylston Street, about a block from us. It's
yes.
The crew. Go ahead.
Okay, they just sent me an email and said their heating system isn't working so well, so I should dress accordingly. So I have three coats with me. Three coats. One still has the tags on them because I'm not sure it's going to be warm enough.
And you may return it. Is that your point?
I don't know. We'll see.
So, Anita, on a much more important note than the cold, what cooking class are you taking at Italy?
I'm taking a ravioli cooking class. It's a gift from my kids that I got for Christmas.
That is fabulous. That is great.
That's a
actually.
Very clever gift. I like that.
I like, too.
Experience gifts.
Lydia Bastianich, who was with us a couple of months ago, is one of the people behind this thing. Anita, enjoy it and stay warm. Thank you for the cold. Appreciate it.
Here's Britt from Worcester. My husband and I are from Minnesota and Wisconsin. Weather like this is routine there, and little is made of a day in the sub-zero. School, work, recreation go on as usual. We are amused by the response to the cold in New England, where it sounds like we're all preparing for the apocalypse every time the temperature drops below 20 degrees. Well, I mean, obviously, because we're not that used to it, right? It's not zero around here that much. I remember when in Burlington, Vermont, you have to walk. I used to walk to work down, and the wind would be coming off Lake Champlain.
Mm-hmm.
You had to put Vaseline on your face so you wouldn't get like frostbitten on the walk to work. And I remember one time it was so cold going skiing that you begin to feel the water in your eyes start to freeze.
Really?
Yeah, that seems impossible, but that's what
it's
like.
Why is it impossible?
I don't know, because it's so close to your body, which is 98.6 degrees, that the water in your eyes would start to freeze, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's how it felt.
Before we take a break, just one thing. We get back to the pet thing for a minute.
Yes.
I only know from my younger daughter's dog, who allegedly weighs 13 pounds. I think it's like 6 pounds. I mean, it's a really light, feathery kind of thing. It hates the cold, even if there's no snow or ice. And by the way, we didn't say that. When there is snow and ice and you get the salt and stuff, you got to wipe it out of their paws.
Between
the really
paws,
burns
too,
and that sort of thing. But this dog doesn't like going out at all. So, and I mean this in sense, do you hold up the dog? And just, I'm serious, and let it pee from the air? What do you do?
I don't know. You hope that the dog gets with the program and goes out quickly and comes back in quickly. I mean, maybe the dog is minus a few IQ points, Jim. I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, 877-301-8970.
We're talking about the cold today. It is very cold today. It's going to get colder tonight, and it's going to be cold tomorrow, but it's going to warm up on Sunday. We're asking you how you're coping with this cold. Do you like it? I can't see necessarily why. What are you doing about your pets? What are you doing about yourself? Do you have a particular favorite kind of long underwear? Our number is 877-301-8970. You can call us or text us at that number. We are broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library, where we are offering free coffee, free tea, or free hot chocolate. And we are streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Brady and Marjorie Egan. We are live at the library on a very cold day, streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews. As Marjorie and I have said, free small coffee, tea, hot chocolate on us, meaning GBH and the Newsfeed Cafe if you're coming down. We're talking about how you're handling or plan to handle this cold snap. Talk about arrogance. Jared Bowen texts me and says, my Canada Goose jacket is serving me very well right now.
Oh, yeah.
How much those things cost?
They're like $1,000.
They're like a lot. Well, obviously, he makes a lot of money. Now, here are a couple of interesting texts. Can we stop talking about little things like frostbite and the dangers of cold and get back to the real issues like Jim telling people how to live their lives and to not gamble? That's Aaron from Lakeville. Now, this is something we can relate to, but unfortunately, I can't tell the story because Marjorie said I can't tell old stories today. As an ice fisherman, you learn to layer up. Keep your feet and head warm. You'll be fine. Cover as much flesh as possible to not get frostbite. That's Dave from Belmont.
Yes.
And I will not tell you the story about Marjorie and me ice fishing where I dug the, what is it called? What's the whole thing? What's the thing you dig with? What's that thing called?
I don't know.
The awl or something. And one of us caught a fish, and it was not Marjorie.
That's right. You caught a fish. And we ate it almost immediately.
We did.
It was delicious.
Grilled right
Listen
on the
to
ice.
This. Listen to this.
For
I have
real.
No idea if what this person is saying is really true, but this is what they
What's
said.
That?
This is Bulent, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, from Arlington. He says, since I went raw vegan a year ago, my body recalibrated and became unaffected by very high or low temperatures. My thermostat is set to 45 this winter to avoid freezing pipes. Otherwise, I could drop it more. Last summer was the first summer I have ever not used the air conditioner at all.
Yeah, I mean, that is
Can you look into that?
Was the most ridiculous
Tom Brady
thing.
Probably knows about
I was
that.
Just going to say Tom Brady. That's
yeah,
exactly
he
right.
He eats all those weird things. Or he used to.
We don't know if he does anymore. Is he unretired yet, by the way?
No, he's not. A lot of people think he's going to come back. I think this is probably it.
Matt and Brighton, you're next on Boston Public Radio. We're at the Boston Public Library. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent.
Good. So I just wanted to mention, I was just driving down Thoreau, and like where the wide part of the Charles is, like by the Esplanade, it is so windy right now that it is like whitewater rapids. So it is definitely gusty out there. So everyone just be aware of that and bundle up.
Wow.
This would not be a day to be out in the Charles, I would
no,
say.
No, I wasn't planning on being out in the Charles. But if you were, that's very good advice, Matt. Thank you for sharing your observations with us. We appreciate
Listen
it.
Listen to this. This What's is that? Like something from the Pilgrims or something.
What's that?
I put a brick or two in my oven when I make dinner, wrap them in a tea towel, and put them at the foot of my bed, and they stay warm all night long.
I've been doing that since I was 10. I've been doing that. Who doesn't do that? You put a brick in the oven. Is that it?
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I'd be afraid I'd scald the bottom of my feet. 877-301-8970. Lisa in the car. What do you think?
Hey, Lisa.
Hi there.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Love all the stories. I'm glad you're not talking about your diggies anymore. I just wanted to tell a quick anecdote. I am from Massachusetts, but my husband and I lived in Minnesota for about 5 years.
Wow.
My first year back here, I was teaching in Bolton, and it's about 15 degrees outside, and it's recess time, so I've got my 10-year-olds all getting their clothes on. And the teacher next door comes over and is like, Mrs. Paul, do you know it's 15 degrees outside? And I said, yes. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, we're going outside for recess. And she's like, we don't go outside for recess when it's 15 degrees outside. And I just thought it was the funniest thing. I mean, in Minnesota, if it was above zero, they're out there.
How torturous.
You know, the only time they
I'm sorry.
Come,
go, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the only time I ever closed the schools was when it was about 30 degrees low. And with the wind chill, it was about 60 degrees low. And the governor shut down the entire state. But other than that, Minnesota, Minneapolis would be open for schools.
I mean, they're more used to it. Lisa, thanks for the call.
Why
are the Boston schools closed today? I know it's because of the cold, but what specific?
Because you'd be afraid that children would get frostbitten when the buses don't show up for a half an hour or 45 minutes or an hour. I mean, that's one of the worst things ever. They can't get the buses to run on time in Boston. But maybe we're just wussy back here in Massachusetts. I didn't notice that when
you can't have a little kid standing out on
the
street.
No, I'm saying compared to the woman that just called from Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah.
Saying they were outside. Remember that movie Fargo?
Oh.
They were freezing the whole winter out there, like in blankets and blankets of snow.
Remember when they fed the person into the wood chipper?
I do.
Yeah. A couple of people I'd like to feed into a wood chipper. By the way, last time I did that, I got in real trouble. Joking. I totally joking. And the people I was thinking of doing it to have already passed away. So it's not even an issue.
Carol from Burlington. Thank you for calling.
By the way, it was head first into the wood chipper. That's even worse. Feet first.
Yeah, it's better.
But I don't want to do it anyway. I want to be clear.
How it's going to feel when your head got there.
Nobody living am I thinking of doing that,
all right,
too.
Jim. That's his story. He's sticking to it. Carol in Burlington, thank you for calling.
Hey, Carol, what's up?
He's going to ask us about the wood chipper.
Go ahead, what?
Somebody wants to sign up for the wood chipper, Jim.
Go ahead, Carol, what's up?
I am covered head to toe in alpaca fur.
Oh. And is that keeping you warm?
It's very warm. I have alpaca socks, scarf, a head warmer, and a cape.
But, Carol, are we supposed to be wearing alpaca, or was that like yesterday's news before we became more educated about the consequences? Is this like... shaved off an alpaca or a dead alpaca?
No, it's actually, there's an alpaca farm in Harvard, Mass.
Oh.
They have to shave them.
Oh.
And actually the baby alpacas get shaved when they're two.
Oh.
And it's the tightest fur and it keeps it the warmest. It's very cozy.
Can I ask you a personal question? How much does one of these babies cost? How much is like an alpaca scarf, for example, cost? How much?
I think it was about $30.
Oh.
My cape, if you go to the store, the cape was $90.
Wow.
But if you go to the mall, it's about $2,000.
Oh, my God. Hey, Carol, thanks for sharing that with us. We appreciate it. This is Lee from Needham. This is a real problem. Are you going to read this?
No, you go ahead.
Jim, one of the local news stations said last night that EVs should stay plugged in throughout these cold temperatures 24/7, even if you have a full charge. I don't have one at home, but what am I going to do about
that? Guess you're out of luck, Jim.
I'm serious. What do you do?
Are
you doing? You have an electric car. What are you doing, Jamie?
He's plugging it in.
You have a plug-in at your house?
A plug.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like a mile an hour kind of thing, but it's plugged
in.
Okay.
We're getting a lot of pushback from the vegan who said he didn't need to worry about changing the temperatures.
That's ridiculous. Yeah,
somebody says we should inform that vegan that he's dying, which is why he's impervious to temperature changes. So there you go.
Well, then I can put him in the wood chipper. That doesn't violate my I was kidding. It was a very poor joke, and I apologize.
Yeah. Okay. How about that lady we read about this morning that the nursing home thought she had expired?
They were dead. By the way, I want to be cremated until you read a story like that. She's in the damn thing at one of the body bags, and they happen to unzip the body bag.
She's gasping.
And she's breathing.
For air.
Because there's no air in the body
bag.
That's
kind of a nightmare scenario, isn't it?
That'd be a problem. They load you into the oven.
Yeah.
And you say, excuse me.
Jim,
it's a real problem.
There's a new thing now beyond cremation. Mulched. You're supposed to be
mulched. I'm not doing that.
Okay.
We've
discussed this long enough. We are moving on now.
No, we're actually going to discuss it briefly with the doctor in a couple of seconds about how to stay warm from someone who actually knows as opposed to you and me.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk up after the break with Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett. She's back. We're going to talk to her about the cold. We're also going to talk to her about a very sad subject we've been discussing for recent days because of a tragedy down in Duxbury. Postpartum psychosis. That's next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. We are broadcasting from the Boston Public Library, and we are streaming live on youtube.com/GBH News.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. We're live at the Boston Public Library, streaming at youtube.com/GBH News. If you're concerned about staying warm, like to have a little bit of fun for the next couple of hours, please come to the Boston Public Library. In fact, the Central Branch and all the branches are de facto warming centers till they close at the end of the day. So if you need them, use them. Plus, courtesy of the Newsfeed Cafe and GBH News, if you come on down, you get a free coffee, tea, or hot chocolate. And by the way, what Marjorie failed to tell you when you said that, if you get a free coffee, tea, or hot chocolate, and you try to leave here within 10 minutes, you'll be handcuffed to a railing until you've spent your 10 minutes at the cafe.
Okay.
In any case, we're joined... Okay, yourself. We're joined by Dr. Catherine Gerger-Barnett. She's the Vice Chair of Primary Care Innovation and Transformation at Boston Medical Center, Clinical Associate Professor at BU Medical School. By the way, the phone lines are open, but very briefly here. If you have a question, you really can't control yourself from asking on anything we're talking to her about. General questions for the doctor, 877-301-8970. Doctor, it's great to see you.
Wonderful to see you both.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for coming out on this cold day. We've been saying how cold it is. And I just wondered, we talked about what to do, you know, keep your skin covered and worry about frostbite and pests and stuff. Anything that you can think of that we should add to the prescription for freezing cold, you know, below 0 days?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that we really shouldn't be traveling at night. So people, you know, making sure that people are indoors, especially overnight. I know that Pine Street Inn and a lot of our homeless shelters are really opening up their doors. We're actually, Mayor Wu, who I know was on your show earlier this week, is also talking about, you know, the possibility of opening up train stations, et cetera, for people on the streets. But for anybody who has a house, please don't get in your car. You know, we know that cars are having more difficulty starting at night. And if you do have to go out, then make sure you have lots of emergency supplies in the car.
Boy, I didn't even think of that. That's a great
point. Wait, think of which?
If you get stuck in your car in this weather and your car's not running, that's
a big problem. You can get frostbite within 15 minutes in this kind of weather that we're going to have tonight. So, just staying snugly and staying in a safe place.
Well, it's good. Marjorie and I are going to Helen Chin's 90th birthday party tonight. That should be great.
That'll be very snugly.
In Quincy.
I'm sure.
Okay.
Yes.
We're thrilled, actually, about it because we love Helen Chin.
Yes.
But in any case, COVID. We've talked to other people before, but not with your level of expertise. What is the ending, the Biden administration's announcement as of May 11th, the emergency is over. In real terms, we read in the Globe that while certain things disappear, fewer things disappear because we're in Massachusetts.
Yes.
In real terms, what should people worry about not being available or not being free anymore as of May 11th or 12th?
Sure. So the announcement from President Biden just came out at the end of last month saying the pandemic is over, quote unquote. We know that still 500 people are dying a day of COVID-19, so not to belittle that or mitigate that. But in terms of funding, so your point exactly, Jim, the Massachusetts is going to be in a much better state than most anywhere else in the country in terms of coverage, especially Medicaid coverage. So our equivalent is MassHealth. Mm-hmm. MassHealth is going to continue to cover tests and vaccines, gratefully. So people who want to get COVID-19 vaccine booster, that will continue to be covered through MassHealth and all private insurance companies. The big thing that we think about on the hospital side is that and you probably saw this in some of the reporting as well, is that we had this kind of wonderful exception for when people were coming into the hospital. Prior to the pandemic, they had to be hospitalized for at least 3 days before they went to a long-term care facility or nursing facility. But that was waived during the pandemic. Unfortunately, that will now come back, which will create even more, potentially more backlog in hospitals. So we are concerned about that and on a systems front. And so thinking about a loved one going into a hospital and what that means in terms of throughput. The good news, again, is medications and vaccines will still be covered. We're looking at Paxlovid will still likely be covered in Massachusetts, not in other states. So if you're traveling, you have loved ones living in other places, they will face probably bigger repercussions. The last thing I want to say about this is about telehealth. So
this is huge.
Telehealth I have said several times in my 17 years of practice, I've never seen a better opportunity for improving health equity as what we have on telehealth. We have the possibility of improved access, people with multiple jobs. I've had people, you know, call in from broom closets to get a visit. We know it's made a huge impact on mental health, substance use disorder, and all of those things have been covered by Medicaid, Medicare. My biggest concern, or one of our biggest concerns, is coverage for that post-2024, and what, you know, at this point we don't know where the coverage for that will go. And so I think all of us working on advocacy and policy around improved coverage for telehealth moving forward.
You know, two quick points. One of the things that really troubled me about this, and well, the announcement, well, several things. One, it appears that it was made by the president to get ahead of the Republicans in the House who are about to end the emergency. And I have to say, I don't know if this is where you were going with this.
Yeah.
When 500 people are dying a day,
yeah,
the emergency is not over.
Yeah.
Second problem is, the good news is the vaccines will still be free in Massachusetts. The bad news is nobody's getting them.
That's correct.
When you have booster rates at, 15 or 16%, the bivalent, is that how you pronounce it? Bivalent
perfect.
Booster, 15 to 16%. And you sort of hear in the back of your head, somebody in the Biden administration said, the emergency's over. What that says to me, unless you're obsessed with vaccines like Marjorie and I am, no,
right.
I'm serious.
Yes.
It says to you, well, I probably don't have to get that anymore, which
that's
makes
right.
your job
even
10
harder.
Times harder, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's exactly right. I think, how do we continue to communicate the severity of what's happening while we're simultaneously communicating this quote-unquote end of the emergency? And that's part of why I want to talk about other public health things today, too, because I think this is an opportunity to say, this is still a public health emergency, but how do we continue to talk about all the other consequences and fallout that's happening as a result of COVID-19?
Like what?
And, well, for instance, mental health, right? So we talk a lot about mental health. And the severity that we've seen, you know, last month or a month and a half ago, I was talking about pediatric mental health and the acuity that we've seen as a result of COVID-19. So how do we continue to keep these things top of mind? And frankly, I think part of it is complete transparency with public health officials. It's creating better messaging from public health. It's having people work across the aisle, really doing interdisciplinary work. So it's not just clinicians speaking to the community, but the community speaking to the community. It really, I think our lessons have been that we really need to shift the narrative of how we continue to keep people healthy.
You know, one of the things, I remember when Obamacare was very controversial, and a lot of states that were run by the GOP, frankly, had an opportunity to get all this federal money. They wouldn't have to pay for it. They get federal money to expand Medicaid so more poor people could get insurance. Now, those people who got an insurance through the COVID crisis are going to be back in the same boat because these states just almost unbelievably cruelly, to me, refused to take this federal money for Medicaid. So I'm wondering where Obamacare does fit in into this whole uninsured situation. You know, we've kind of stopped talking about the options on Obamacare and what's affordable and what's not. So where is Obamacare?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I mean, the Medicaid expansion that we saw, to your point, I think really proliferate during the pandemic, we have really good documentation that it's made a huge impact in people, who, especially communities that are traditionally marginalized in terms of health outcomes, life expectancy, in states that have had Medicaid expansion. So again, how do we use science? How do we use the data to drive policy? And so we have enough data now in terms of health outcomes. So if you're actually wanting to keep people healthier and invest in health, that's the kind of data we need to be following.
Yeah,
and
spend
states
less money,
need to be following.
Right?
I mean, amen. Yes.
Because these
going
people
upstream.
Now
yes.
don't have insurance. They're going to have to pay to
that's
get a,
correct.
To buy a test. They're going to have to pay to get a
yes.
vaccine.
Yes.
They're going to have to. They're not going to be able to get treatment
yes.
because they can't.
Yep.
They have no insurance. I mean, it's so self-defeating. Even if you're just looking at it from a financial perspective.
Yeah. So part of it is the Medicaid. Part of it is FMLA. Part of it is, you know, what you do when somebody gets sick. How do you keep them from getting more sick? And again, all the downstream consequences that we've seen as a result.
One last thing, Dr. Catherine Gerger Barnett, before we move to postpartum depression and psychosis, is when I read that Moderna and Pfizer are now charging $100 and some dollars,
it's hard to swallow.
Is that not usurious? I mean, there's what does a vaccine cost to manufacture and put on the market?
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact dollars and cents for Moderna and Pfizer, but we certainly know that it is far less than 120 or 130. I think it's a few shows ago we talked about the fact that Moderna and Pfizer were getting all up in arms with each other around some of their patents and how that was going forward. I think the fact is. The public health emergency, while the funding may be over, we want to continue to see some sort of spirit of engaging, working across the aisle, not necessarily profiting from this situation. And unfortunately, we're seeing, again, that kind of chipping away of that goodwill. And again, they're saying, well, look, it's just going to be the payers. It's going to be on the payers' back. It's not going to be on the individual's back. But fundamentally, we live in a system where everything is connected. So the more the payers are getting charged, the more they're going to charge the employers for insurance, and it becomes a vicious cycle.
Okay, I want to get on my feminist high horse here when we talk about a postpartum psychosis.
Yes, and please do.
Because I think that the trauma, even for an even-keeled mother, having her first baby, going home and trying to care for that baby, even with help from a husband or a family member or something, she's nursing, she's up all night, she can't sleep, she's worried about dropping the baby, she's worried about the baby stopping breathing, all these things. We so underestimate what a big deal this is. So let's talk about people that do have postpartum depression, which is very common, which in rare cases slides into the psychosis.
Yes.
But we don't treat it as well and as seriously as we should.
Yeah. No, I think this is a multifactorial issue. Right. And so just to kind of backtrack. So the terminology that's now used is a perinatal mood disorder. So I think we've really gotten kind of focused on this postpartum depression term. And understandably, that's what's written a lot about. But the mood disorders is a greater kind of umbrella of classification. So it can start anywhere during pregnancy and up to a year postpartum. And I think you've really put your finger on it in terms of thinking about it as a feminist issue, but it's also a lack of kind of thinking through the whole person, right? So in traditional care, a woman goes through, she has all of her prenatal care. I'm a family medicine doctor, so I have the complete privilege of taking care of somebody before their pregnancy, during their pregnancy, after their pregnancy. So we have that longitudinal relationship. Not all women have that experience. A lot of women will go in, they'll maybe just meet their provider for the first time, get the care they need during pregnancy, and then once the baby is out, they're no longer really the patient.
Yeah.
The baby is the patient. Right. And I think actually even just thinking about the way we talk about it in our society, we always say congratulations, right, to somebody. And it's a beautiful thing. And, it is a beautiful thing if it's a wanted pregnancy and somebody, a family can welcome this child into the world. But it's also one of the most challenging things that a woman will ever have to go through. And frankly, not just a woman. Right. It's the whole ecosystem of her care. So your whole body changes, right? You have this crazy influx of hormones, and then you're expected to go through, with a huge change in your hormones postpartum and no sleep, and often a huge amount of loneliness and isolation. You're supposed to kind of keep even keeled. And to your point, I think it's incredibly misunderstood or not addressed enough. And actually, in terms of thinking about the prevalence, so we actually know that 1 in 7 women will have some sort of depression perinatally. So either during their pregnancy or for the year afterwards. 1 in 5 women will have anxiety, which is, kind of a shocking amount. And then you also have bipolar and OCD. And bipolar is, where we're seeing the greatest risk for psychosis. So it's not just necessarily out of the depression and anxiety. And I'm not a psychiatrist, but again, we do screen and think about this a lot.
I know what we're talking about now. While you were talking to Marjorie, I just looked this up on Oxfam's website. They estimate and COVAX, the international organization, estimates, either of you want to guess how much it costs Pfizer and Moderna
to
manufacture one dose that they now intend to sell for more than $100?
$1.69.
$1.20.
Oh,
wow.
That was pretty close.
I mean, is that?
Do I get another free cup of coffee?
Well, I'm sorry. No, you get a free dose of Pfizer.
Once again, it gets back to lobbyists funding the campaigns of our corrupt politicians and not wanting to rein in the cost of these pharmaceuticals with this ridiculous claim that they're not going to be able to do any new research. I think they're doing okay for the most part.
One more time. $1.20 a dose. And they intend to sell it post this emergency ending on May 11th for anywhere from $100 to $120, according to reports.
So screening for depression is free.
Because of that, you mean. Exactly.
No, period. Yeah.
Well, so let's get back to this great great piece you co-wrote with a colleague, Nashira Baril, the Globe, about birth centers.
Yeah.
And there's only one left in Massachusetts, up in Northampton, the home of Smith College, the biggest feminist school in America.
Which we love.
But anyway, I went to midwives for my first kid at the Brigham.
Yep.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was a totally different experience because, if I may just go on for a minute here, because oftentimes you wind up as a first-time mother not knowing the physician that delivers your baby because your doctor's not on call, right? Your doctor's not in the hospital. So you have a stranger. Well, with the midwives, you have four people. You see every one of them during the term. And so you know it's not going to be a stranger that shows up. They ask you about things like, do you have a washer dryer? Mm-hmm. Who's going to come in and help you after this? Do you have plans? What about your maternity? All these things that you don't feel like you're battling with them about your birth plan and all this stuff. They are fantastic. And it's totally, especially for the first child, which you don't know what's going to happen, right?
Yes.
So I don't understand why there aren't birth centers everywhere and why there aren't more midwives delivering babies in the hospital, especially since if there's something that goes wrong, you can rush down the hall to the operating room or whatever if you need an emergency C-section or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'd love you to weigh in on what you said about birth centers.
Yeah, well, let me also just clarify that it's not just the first birth where these things can happen.
That's
actually,
right.
You can have trauma and depression and psychosis, as we saw in the tragedy in Duxbury. That was her third child.
Yep.
Although she had a history of mental health things before, the big thing is I feel like a little bit of a broken record in terms of thinking about finances, right? So we know that midwives actually get paid less than OBGYNs, and that's a huge issue in terms of parity of pay, despite the fact that they're incredibly comprehensive with their care. Midwives don't do the surgical, the C-sections.
Right.
A birth by OBGYN or a family medicine doctor who delivers pays better than a birth by a midwife, which is
to the hospital.
To the hospital, but also birth centers. So part of what the birth center that my colleague, and I also co-wrote it with another terrific colleague at Boston Medical Center, and I wrote about was the fact that more neighborhood birth centers need to be set up in terms of real equity, right? So that women are going to places that they know, that's in their neighborhood, run by midwives, for this very reason, in terms of building trust, building collaboration, and having that holistic care that happens during pregnancy and also postpartum.
Yeah.
So we really think about, I don't think we talk enough about this fourth trimester, right? So women really should be getting comprehensive care in that last, the 3 months postpartum, and not just a one-time 6-week postpartum visit for a normal vaginal delivery. It's just not adequate. It's, we know that depression, anxiety, OCD, all those things can already be rampant prior to 6 weeks.
People that are listening now that may have just given birth or someone in their family that's just given birth, what should they be looking for?
Yeah, yeah. So there was actually just a great piece in the Globe today about partners too, by the way. So partners suffer. Partners can suffer from depression, anxiety. It's not talked about as much. One of the things that I always do with my patients who are pregnant is actually creating a plan where they have it up in terms of these are the things you should be looking for, not just to share with their partner, not just to, so it's very hard to have insight if you're going through the mental health crisis yourself. So having a partner have a list of, you know, they talked about an Edinburgh post-depression score. I think that's fine. It's hard to know if you're not a clinician how to score those things, but you know, are you more fatigued? Are you more irritable? Does it go longer than 2 weeks? You know, and are you having trouble sleeping? Those things that are kind of a checklist. And to give it to your loved ones, not just the person you're living with. Give it to your family members. Give it to your friends saying, hey, if you see this, you know, please let me know or help me. Help me get help. And there's all kinds of resources that you can get urgent care. But frankly, we need better access to mental health now for people, not just postpartum, but as we know, for everybody in our community.
You know, Dr. Catherine Gergerman, we have less than a minute. Just quickly again, so I'm clear.
Yes.
Not only is there more humanity in these birth centers.
Yes.
But, or at least a different kind of humanity, but it's also huge cost savings down the line. Is
yes,
it not?
Absolutely.
So what am I missing?
It's thinking about what's the return on investment down the road versus what are you going to accrue now, right? So again, it's a very specific, I think, medical approach that we have, or just societal approach, where we're really thinking about what can we get now versus what can we get downstream.
Which is almost every topic we discuss with about physical infrastructure, pensions,
that's
maternal
right.
health, whatever
yes.
it is. That's the
short-sightedness. And I know we only have 2 minutes, but the pediatric obesity thing is similar, sort of thinking about how do we do a systems approach versus helping the individual.
We have to discuss that with you next time.
Yes.
I have to say, I can't think of a topic we've discussed recently where every single caller or texter disagreed with the recommendations from the docs on
well,
this.
There's
so we'll
a lot
next
to
time.
Unpack.
Okay,
yes.
We'll do it next time. It's great
Perfect.
To see you. Thanks.
Doctor, thank you.
You
so much for coming thank in. You. Dr. Catherine Gerger-Barnett is the Vice Chair of Primary Care Innovation and Transformation at Boston Medical Center and Clinical Associate Professor at Boston University's Medical School. Up next, after weeks after rough sleepers were getting the boot at South Station, even in the cold, Governor Maura Healey is reopening the space overnight. We're going to talk with Boston Globe columnist Shirley Young about that and more next. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH, broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library.
I'm Jim Browning, head on Boston Public Radio, live from the Boston Public Library. According to Pope Francis, in a since-deleted tweet, God placed the gift of life in your hands, and the middle finger is for honesty. Who could disagree? Media maven Sue O'Connell joins us to discuss this, new blood donation rules from the FDA for gay and bisexual men, and the unseating of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar.
I'm Marjorie Egan. Nia Grace of Daryl's Kitchen and Cheryl Strader of Soleil join us for a restaurant roundtable. Then we'll hear from the Black-Centered Arts Collaborative, Castle of Our Skins, for a live Music Friday performance. And because we're obsessed with how often we wash things around here, we'll end the show with a pressing question. How often do you wash your jeans? How about never, the experts say. 877-301-8970 is the number to call and text us ahead on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Yeakin. Welcome to hour number 2 of Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. We are broadcasting live, as we do every Tuesday and every Friday, from the Boston Public Library, and we are streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews. Plus, we have free small coffees, teas, or hot chocolate for those who want to join us today at the Newsfeed Cafe, because it is a little chilly outside.
Well, it's also a nice place to warm up. It's one of the city's official warming centers, and until its closing, it's available. But the third reason, beyond the free stuff, which is great and very kind, we thank GBH News and the Newsfeed Cafe, and that it's a warming center, we thank the library. Did you just hear
yes.
Castle of Our Skins
yes.
rehearsing?
Yes.
These
They're
people are
going to
play for us in the 1 o'clock hour. I'm telling you, if you want to lift a little bit later in the show, Don't just watch it on YouTube or listen to it on the radio. Come on down. They are fabulous. In any case, in the interim, before they play, we're joined now by Boston Globe columnist Shirley Leung. She joins us regularly, and I believe, I'm not sure, she is bearing gifts. Let's hope she is. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Hi. I'm here. Thank you. I'm here for the hot coffee.
That's right. We had to persuade her to come down here and join us. So, Shirley Leung.
Excuse me.
Oh, the gifts.
What'd you bring?
So, I brought this for my outgoing boss, Brian McGorry.
Right.
And, Jim, you were at the going away party.
I was.
And Brian loves chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And so he loves this Swiss chocolate called Lauterrock, and you had not had
it. I've never heard of it
and
until I saw you.
They're just at the Pru. So I have a box of pralines and a box of, I don't know what these are. It's like chocolate meets cookies.
Wow.
And I can't even explain them, but they melt in your mouth.
Can I just ask you one thing? I don't want to be small about this. Why didn't you bring anything for Marjorie? What makes you nervous?
Marjorie, this is all yours.
Thank you very much.
All yours.
Oh my goodness! This looks fit. Oh, it's got different kinds.
Yeah,
it might be like.
Thank you very much.
Shirley Leung, thank you very much.
Very kind
that was
of you.
Lovely.
Well, please share with
Jeannie. We will. We absolutely
Aiden,
will.
The whole crew.
We'll absolutely share with the whole crew. So, Shirley Leung, congratulations to you for getting this whole thing started. About a week and a half ago, you wrote a story about how the security company hired by the T at South Station was shutting the place down from midnight to 5 p.m. A.M. Excuse me, locking out homeless people who use it for a shelter, particularly when it gets really cold out. The MBTA owns the building, told you it was supposed to be open for 24 hours, yet you went down there, intrepid reporter, that you are, and saw the guards there using trash bags to tie off the doors. We asked Governor Healey about that earlier in the week, and here's what she had to say.
They retain a private security company, and we've gone back now and we've talked to the private security company, and you saw the garbage bags are off. They're not locking the doors that way. And I'm going to be clear that if we face extreme weather, we're going to allow people to stay there overnight. It's a matter of basic humanity.
By the way, what we didn't play there was prior to those words, she said, I read the story.
Yes.
And as soon as I read the story, I called Dr. Jim O'Connell based upon your
work,
Shirley.
Because it's going to be like minus 10 degrees tonight. It's because of you that people are not going to be out on the street tonight instead of being inside the South Station.
And Healy,
keeping warm.
Obviously.
And Healy, yes.
And Marjorie, I have to thank you for asking that question because I have been trying to find out. We've all been wondering what will happen when the Arctic chill comes in. So thank you for asking that question. And thank you to Governor Healy for answering it because, you know, she didn't have to answer the question, but she obviously had thought about it. She, as I wrote in a follow-up piece, she had gotten to know Dr. Jim O'Connell, who is the co-founder of Boston Healthcare for the Homeless. He's a subject of a new book by Tracy Kidder. He's going to be on
Monday.
Yes.
Monday?
Next week?
Wednesday. Yeah, they're both,
and,
they're both on soon. Whatever
right.
it is. Okay.
So Dr. O'Connell's been treating chronically homeless, what they call the rough sleepers, people who choose to live on the street. They don't want to go to shelter forever, whatever reason. And so he treats them, he's been treating them for decades. And I had interviewed him, and in the book, there's a whole section in the book about South Station. And years ago, homeless people were allowed to stay overnight at South Station. And I asked him, I said, you know, is that still the case? And he said, no, they lock up the station starting at 11 o'clock. And so I went to check it out myself. And sure enough, I saw the security guards put up the signs, tie the bags. And you could see that the homeless people who are at the station, you could see as the last trains depart, as the clock ticks towards 11, they leave. They are trained to leave. They don't want to be hassled by security. So Maura Healey actually had gotten to know Jim O'Connell while she was Attorney General. She's taken an interest in the opioid crisis at Mass and Cass, so she would call him up and talk to him about Mass and Cass. She would also visit the transgender homeless clinic mm-hmm. that he and his team ran. So she felt comfortable enough to call him up and said, tell me what's going on. And when I talked to Jim, he said, yeah, she asked a lot of really good questions, and she listened. And he found out from you, Marjorie, like being on the radio, that from the governor being on the radio, that she had decided to open up South Station. It will be opened on a case-by-case basis for homeless people tonight, or I think Friday and Saturday.
You know, I want to highlight the thing you just mentioned. First of all, to say it again, none of this would have happened without your reporting. It's great that Marjorie asked the question, even though I'm a little jealous that she asked it instead of me. There's a little competition going on. But you know what the best part of the story is to me? That the governor picked up the damn phone, didn't call an aide or the head of HHS or some staff person. And by the way, what are we talking about? A couple of dozen people, maybe? This is not some huge impact thing. But as she said,
it could be tonight. Well, no, but it's going to be 10 degrees below zero.
Right. But she says basic humanity is at stake here. And she picks up the phone herself. And Cole, I mean, he's a big deal, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful, and I hope an indication of a kind of hands-on thing that Baker did a lot in a lot of settings, and I hope and I guess she will be doing, which is really a wonderful thing. So in any case, good for all of you involved, and we'll see what happens tonight, and hopefully the pledge will be honored. So you wrote a piece. It's a little uncomfortable to write a piece about people being honored when you're one of the people being honored. But you were able to pull it off. There was this huge gathering of AAPI folks at the Boston Foundation. Do a little background for people about where that comes from and what the Boston Foundation has been doing.
Well, the Boston Foundation was the host of the event, but the list was put together by Colette Phillips, mm-hmm. a well-known public relations...
Convener, let's say.
something called Get... She has this series of networking series called Get Connected mm-hmm. for People of Color. And so this year she decided, you know what, I want to do an inaugural list of the most influential Asian American Pacific Islanders in Boston. And so it's a list of almost close to 100 people. I am on the list.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Along with Mayor Wu, of course, but so many others. I brought my award.
Oh, my God. woman is shameless.
Can
I direct that to me? See, what does it say?
That is great.
Eastern Bank Foundation's Boston's 50 most influential Asian American Pacific. I know, Shirley Leung. Look at
this. They even put everyone's name on
it.
I know.
And wow. It's an incredible list. It's, you know, people you've heard of course, you already mentioned Helen Chin Slitsky, who turns 90 today.
Tonight,
so happy birthday.
Yes.
Happy birthday. She's known as Auntie Helen, and she's one of the legends on the list, along with Frank Chin, of course, Uncle Frank.
By the way, Helen was on our board for a long time, in addition to every other wonderful thing she's done. Yeah.
And if you look through the list, you know, there are people like Takeda Pharmaceuticals, U.S. President Julie Kim. She was at the event and she spoke. You know, Takeda Pharmaceuticals has 3,000 employees in Massachusetts.
Yeah,
it's actually the largest life sciences. The Vertex CEO was there, Reshma Kalamrani, and she spoke. Grace Lee was also there. She's the M&T Bank Regional President. It was a real who's who. Ian Huang, who's the Cambridge City Manager. I mean, think about that. Cambridge and Boston are run by Asian American politicians.
Mayor and the
mayor's,
city manager.
Well, yeah, Cambridge, right? The mayor is also Asian American as well. So it was a great list, a great event. We had 300 allies and honorees at the Boston Foundation, who was kind enough to host. It was called a historic. It felt like a historic event.
It read like that too. By the way, a couple more board peepers. Pam Ettinger of
Boca
our board
Hill
members.
Community College President
Muhammad Ali is
Muhammad
on our
Ali.
Board,
from IDG.
But hasn't Lee Pelton told, isn't there a piece of the Boston Foundation that has, is it called the Asian American Fund?
What's that? Lee Pelton also spoke. He welcomed the group there. They have something called the Asian Community Foundation.
Community Foundation.
Was co-founded by Helen mm-hmm. and also Paul Lee, who's mm-hmm. a longtime attorney in Boston. The Boston Foundation has been instrumental in helping to build up the Asian American community here. One more thing I couldn't put in my story, I did put this in my story that two decades ago, I mean, we couldn't have created mm-hmm. this. A list like this did not exist. There simply were not enough kind of high-profile Asian Americans in the region. But I have to say, I started to see a real change, a real shift starting in 2016. That was the year that Michelle Wu was city council president.
Oh, yeah.
And then that was also the year that Dan Coe was the chief of staff to Mayor Walsh, and also Tommy Chang was the Boston Public School superintendent.
Right.
And I remember I had done a moderated panel with them. I said, wow, this is something. We've got to watch this. Asian Americans are on the rise. And I think from there on, you've seen this incredible rise of Asian Americans.
You know, Tommy Chang was here for at least a good 10 minutes as superintendent, too.
He's the CEO of a nonprofit now, I think, out in California.
By the way, I thought this thing was great. And Lee LaPelt is going to be with us on Tuesday, so we'll talk more about it from the Boston Foundation. And by the way, I know Colette Phillips is one of the most electric, wonderful people ever.
Yeah.
But did you find it the only odd part of this whole thing, while she deserves a lot of credit, it's an African-American woman who is pulling together the list of the most prominent AAPI people in town. Well, what was your reaction
to that? You know, Colette talked about it.
Well, she did.
That night. And because when she first started her business many decades ago, she said it was the AAPI community. It was the leaders who came to her and helped her. How can we help you?
Oh, really?
I didn't know. It was like Auntie Helen, Uncle Frank, how can we help you? They understood the power of communities of color coming together, especially in a town like Boston, right?
Uh-huh. You know what I loved in your story that spoke, I think, to a generational change as well, or attitude? You have a quote from Helen Chen. You said, of course, she's 90 years old today. She's being celebrated tonight. She said that there was and Colette Phillips was talking about this, that there was an idea that Asian American community was supposed to be, or was supposed to keep quiet. And Helen Chin said, I was one of those people keeping quiet. My mother always said, be invisible, do your own work, and keep your head down. And Helen Chin said, now we have so much more visibility. I'm just so proud of it. So there was that kind of sea change.
I have to say, it's very recent. I grew up, my parents said the same thing to me.
Yeah.
I'm not 90, but I'm much younger than her. But I have to say, it's a very recent change. Or maybe, I grew up with that. My immigrant parents told the same thing.
Yeah.
For me, to go into journalism is utterly shocking. It's very, public, outspoken kind of position. They would be very happy if I were a software engineer, a doctor, just keep quiet. And so, but I think what's happened is that, we've changed. We see what's going on. We see, especially in the last few years with rising Asian hate, you have to speak up.
Yeah.
You have to say something. You have to get empowered so you can make sure that, the world is better for the next generation. And so there is a real sense of kind of civil rights, that we need to fight just like everyone else.
By the way, one more person on the list. There are a lot of incredible people we should have mentioned because she's with us a few days ago. Irene Lee. I would argue Tracy Chang should be on the list, too, from Pago.
There
does incredible community work.
That's what was incredible with the list. There was nearly 100 people on the list, but there were probably 100 other people who should have been on the list. And that's the people have been emailing, what about this guy? What about this person? You forgot this person. I was like, okay, I guess we have to do another list next year. We'll have Colette do one next year.
Well, it's great that they did it. We're talking to Shirley Leung from the Boston Globe.
Well, let's talk about another one of your columns, this effort to close the racial wealth gap and have real estate operate a different way in Boston. I think Daryl Sells, Kirk Sykes, and Richard Taylor, as you mentioned, who are big deals in the development community, are involved in this. What's going on?
So it's this fund that they've been working on quietly for 2 years. It's called BREEF, which stands for the Boston Real Estate Inclusion Fund. And basically, it's been, and it just formally launched, I think, last week. And basically, it's a fund. They're inviting women and people of color to participate in this fund. So Daryl, Kirk, and Richard over the years have been, entrepreneurs. They've been competitors, in the business field. They've been developers. And so what they're doing is they want more diversity in Boston real estate projects. And so they've teamed up with this other group called Basis out of New York, and they're kind of the money managers. And what they do is they're gonna raise money, tens of millions of dollars, maybe even more than that, hundreds of millions ultimately. And what they want to do is they want to pick Boston real estate projects that they want Brief to invest in. And they want this money to come from women and people of color. And this all started with the so-called Massport model.
So, can you explain what it is? We've talked about it a lot, but explain to people who aren't familiar.
So Massport a few years ago decided. So Massport owns a lot of waterfront land in the Seaport District. They also run, Logan Airport. And so through the years, they put out to bid their parcels, and a lot of developers come and bid for them. They build hotels or office buildings. And so Massport's decided, the winning bids always go to the same group of, developers and construction teams, and they tend to be white and male-dominated. Why don't we create a bidding process, to create an incentive where you would score higher points, a lot of points. I think it's 25% of your final scores. How did you do on diversity? And they left it up to these teams to decide how they would meet that requirement. And so they did this on the first parcel was where the Omni Hotel is in the Seaport. And what they found is all these teams came in with more diverse investment teams, diverse construction teams. They realized that if you create an incentive, people will find partnerships. And so that's how Rich Taylor got involved with Omni. He started to pull together investors of color and women to participate in the Omni. And Daryl Settles, I believe, is also part of that. And so the idea is that once people of color or women have the experience on a big project, they get to go to the next big project. And so, that's what happened to Rich and Daryl. They went on to bid on a project at Harvard, the Harvard Research Campus. So they led the investment, raising investment among investors of color, I think black and Latino investors for the Harvard project. And so then they were like, why are we competing? Because Kirk Seitz also competed for these same projects and lost. Oh. And so there were a lot of investor of colors who couldn't participate. And so they decided, why don't we work together? Mm-hmm. Why don't we pull all our money together, work together, and have developers approach us, or we approach developers or existing projects. We'll bring you diverse money to the table.
It's pretty great. Totally.
Do I have one more minute?
Yes, absolutely.
So this is all about closing the racial wealth gap to allow investors of color to participate and make money off of real estate, because real estate is a big way you can make money. But also, there's power when you've skin in the game, right? So this is the idea that you can shape the project. And Kirk Sykes talked about this in his own development career. He built Crosstown in Roxbury, over two decades ago. And he said that project, we built a hotel. It had the hotel workforce was 95% diverse. That hotel had the first black general manager in New England. And also think about it. He invested in Roxbury at a time when nobody was investing in Roxbury. He saw the potential. And even today, it's still really hard to draw, big investment in Roxbury. So,
all of this is based, as you say, on this Massport model. And it was practically revolutionary. And when you look at it, you say, and this is not to diminish its importance at all or to not congratulate those behind it. It's so obvious that the way to get this all to happen was to make it count. Don't do it because it's a good thing and you'll get a good PR headline or something. Right. Do it because you're much more likely to get the damn contract if you do it in a concrete way.
Exactly.
And it's amazing it took that long. But who are the primary players?
Massport?
Yeah, for the Massport.
Well, Tom Glenn was the ran Massport at the time. Was the brainchild of a Massport board member, Dwayne Jackson, who is a black architect, developer. Ken Turner, the compliance officer, he was also very instrumental. Ken now runs the Mass Life Sciences Center. So there are a lot of people behind this. Jim Rooney also played a role.
Chamber
runs the chamber because originally they came. He was was running the convention center at the time, and originally that parcel was a joint project between the Convention Center Authority and Massport.
Let's also remind, since to complete the loop? What is that expression? Whatever the loop, to circle back to the Boston Foundation, Lee Pelton told us, I don't know, 6 months ago, about the fact that that study that is emblazoned on everybody's head. I mean, if you ask anybody, there are very few stats that stay with people. 250,000 wealth of a typical white family is from the Federal Reserve in 2015 or 2017, whatever it was.
2015, yeah.
2015. The average wealth of a black family, $8. Everybody said, is that a typo? Average wealth of a Dominican family, $0. On and on like this. The Boston Foundation, in conjunction with the Fed, and there's a third partner. Do you know, I can't think of who it is at the moment. But
I
whoever
think
it is.
The Foundation might have funded it.
It may be.
It,
yeah. They're essentially, it's a two-year project, I think. They're going back and not only updating that data to find out if it's as abominable as it was in 2015, but going to do something the first study didn't do with the Fed, which is probe into the causes of this thing so you can attack the causes. I mean, it may be obvious, but that's a really important contribution. And while this other thing is happening, it's actually a positive, encouraging development kind of thing. All right, by the way, let me just say, this chocolate, I've never had it before.
Is it amazing? I haven't
had the
pralines.
It's probably like $50 a piece.
It is.
It is?
No.
Oh, my God.
What I didn't bring you was, if you walk at the Pru, right, they'll have large sheets of chocolate. Like, I don't know if there's like 20 different kinds. I think that is $50 a pound or something, or kilo or whatever. I don't know, whatever they maybe it's a pound, I guess. But it's amazing. But I haven't had the pralines before.
Well, unfortunately, you're not going to have them today either. But... Thank you, but I hope you have them sometime in the foreseeable future.
Have you had one of these, Shirley?
I've had one of those. They also give out free samples.
Would love
you
that.
Know, so I probably had $20 of free samples before I came. You know,
it was really kind of you.
No, Lotterock. Lotterock or something like that.
No, but it's in the Pru thing.
Right. Okay.
Great. Well, Shirley, it's good to see you. We'll see you tonight.
Thank you very much. That's right.
Thanks. Shirley Leung.
Shirley, we've been speaking with Boston Globe business columnist, great business columnist, Shirley Leung, who joins us every week. After a quick break, we're going to get the people that run these two great black-owned restaurants. One of them we actually are getting.
There was only one.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Nia Grace is not going to be here for Darryl's.
Well, that's exactly right. We didn't have to tell everybody that because they didn't know she was coming, but now they do, and
do
she
know.
Can't.
I'm
she
sorry.
Just canceled. It's unfortunate.
But we do have Cheryl Strotter, and she's going to be on next to talk to her about her restaurant, Soleil. She's with us next. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie. And we're live at the Boston Public Library, streaming at youtube.com/GBH News. As Marjorie has said repeatedly, as have I, because it's a cold day, it's a great place to warm yourself, great place to see some great guests, wonderful place to hear some fabulous music in about 45 minutes. And while it is a great place to get a free cup of coffee or tea or hot chocolate, for you, at least, it is not a great place to get a fabulous piece of salmon and cornbread, but it is for me and Marjorie because our guest brought it. We are celebrating black-owned restaurants in our city, and as Marjorie said a minute ago, Nia Grace from Darryl's Corner Bar and Kitchen was expected to be here, a last-minute thing she had to deal with. But Cheryl Strotter is here, and she is the woman behind Soleil in Nubian Square. It is great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. By the way, I just took one bite. What is on the salmon? It is spectacular. What is this?
So that's our citrus salmon with our house blend, a little onion powder, garlic powder, Old Bay, and a couple of pretty cool things.
It's perfect. It is really great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I just have to say, I was just saying this a couple of seconds ago, I am not exactly a big gourmet. Jim is a really good cook, and he eats all this food and stuff, but there are some things I really am obsessive about, and one of them is bread, and one of them particularly is cornbread. And let me just tell you, whatever you do to this cornbread, I mean, it's so moist, because lots of times you get the cornbread.
Yes.
And it's dry, and it's hard. This is soft and moist. So congratulations about that. Tell us about Soleil.
Soleil is named after my granddaughter.
Oh,
she just
that's a great
finished,
name.
Thank you. Her name is Maya Soleil, and I selected her middle name intentionally. You know, as some folks know, it's the term for the sun. Mm-hmm. And it's a tribute to her and to our community, as I see it as warm and bright. And she just finished her first semester in college.
Oh, good for her.
Yes.
And tell people about Nubian Square. I mean, there has been a whole transformation, really, of that whole part of Roxbury. What's going on down there?
Soleil's been in business for 4 years. And in that time, I've seen a transformation take place, and there are great plans for the future. We are housed in the headquarters of the Boston School Department, and we're on the first floor. And what's coming down the road in a few short years is Benjamin Franklin College is moving in. We have various housing developments going up. We have commercial property happening, and all of the plots that went out for an RFP are just about gone. So we see this as the next really thriving area in our great Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
You know, a few months ago, we spoke actually to the president of Benjamin Franklin Institute, right?
Yep.
And the project and the move is really an exciting thing, both I think for all of Boston, but for that neighborhood in particular. Before we talk about the present and talk about what I hope, at least to me, appears to be a modest explosion of black-owned restaurants in Boston. We'll see if you agree in a second. How did you make it through the last couple of years? It's not even really over, but it's over-ish. How did you make it through COVID? You said 4 years. Most of that was under the pandemic.
It was, and we had to make a few pivots. And I like how you said ish, because it really isn't over. And with the pandemic, I don't think that it's going to be completely over. I think we're in a new world. But one of the things we did to survive was increase our catering. As you know, a lot of people were not out just, you know, visiting restaurants and walking into establishments. So we partnered with some nonprofits that were feeding elders and people in various apartment complexes. So we had various contracts. We're putting out 300-400 meals a day.
Wow.
So that's how we survived. We survived by working with some of our local politicians, some of our nonprofit organizations, and we made it through. We're still here. And I'm happy to say catering is one of our strongest arms, because even though staff is back in the building, it's not fully occupied. You can feel the emptiness in the building on certain days as people are on halftime, quarter time, things like that.
How hard is that? I mean, we ask every restaurateur we've had here, or small business owner who's not a restaurateur, the anxiety that I feel, and I have nothing to do with it, even when you tell the story, is immense. You build something that really matters to you, named after your grandkid. I mean, talk about intimate and personal. And it's hanging by a thread. And you found this catering thing, which is obviously a great thing to help get you through. But I know you were one of the people that worked so hard to get the Restaurant Revitalization Act happen to the tune of many billions of dollars. You ultimately ended up getting nothing from it. Is that right?
That is correct. Now, we did receive various forms of funding, whether it was federal or state. We got the PPP. We got some grant money from the city of Boston, all of which I'm grateful for. But you're right. When it came to the big pot of money, we didn't receive anything.
So how was it? What was it like for you as a human being, not as a restaurateur, going through a period where I assume there were moments when you thought, I may not have this business down the line? Were there?
Absolutely. The answer to that is yes. But I walk in faith, and I walk in, you know, the tradition of hard work, and I walk in the tradition of, you know, just stick with it. You know, somewhere there will be that silver lining. And for other restaurants, that wasn't the case. And it was difficult, not only as a restaurateur, just as a person opening a business. It could have been any business.
Sure.
But the restaurant industry was hit very, very hard.
You know. But having said that, so catering helped get you through and it's still going well. But didn't I read somewhere you're also expanding? And is it Boston Public Market? Am I right about that?
Yes.
What's going on with that?
He does his research.
When it comes to food, I prepare, my friend.
He knows everything.
So I wouldn't go that far. What are you doing there?
So it will be another location for us. We'll be able to introduce our food to some new folks.
That's great.
We're sticking with, you know, our Southern tradition, but it's going to be a little bit different because in those types of environments, you want to think about how people enjoy food. And they're going to want it quick and fast. So, yes, we'll have chicken, but it won't be on the bone. It will be pulled. We'll have pulled beef. So it will go into a bowl, quick, fast, easy service. But it's going to have that Soleil flavor.
Can you tell, by the way, before we continue with this, we should have asked you, other than the salmon, which I ate, which is spectacular, and the cornbread, what else did you bring? Tell us what's here.
Well, hold on for a second. While you've been talking, I've been over here eating.
What are you eating?
And I would have some of this red velvet cake, which is spectacular.
Yes.
This is some kind of a custard, but I don't know what it's called.
That is our banana pudding.
Banana pudding.
God. Yes.
This is really, I'm really stuffing myself over here. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we can hear what else you can get at Soleil and what we have here in front of us.
So some other tasty treats that I brought to share with you today is our collard greens. Now, we season those. A lot of times people say, oh, Cheryl, it's not really Southern because it should have some pork in it. And I don't cook with pork. So ours is with smoked turkey and turkey bacon.
Ooh.
I also season it with turmeric and paprika, as well as, you know, the traditional things that go in, some hot peppers and vinegar and things like that. But we have onions in there, green peppers, chopped
garlic.
I like to show the flavor of food more organically. So we have some meat in there, but not a lot. By the way,
I don't care about you showing the flavor. I want to taste the flavor. Do you mind?
I mean,
show the flavor.
I mean, knock yourself out.
Thank you. It's being handed to me. You keep talking, and I'll keep eating.
Go ahead. Just tell us what else you got, because I want to ask you a couple more questions. Tell us what else we got here first.
I have some candied sweet yams and our chicken wings that have honey and mustard and a little bit of barbecue sauce. So those are nice and crunchy.
This is fabulous, by the way. So, really fabulous.
So, Cheryl, do you have a liquor license?
I have a beer and wine license.
Yeah, talk about this. I don't think people understand how difficult it is to get a beer and wine or a full-fledged liquor license in Boston. This is an ordeal. Explain it.
Sure. So this was a learning process for me as well. So our license allows us to serve beer, wine, and cordials. So I wasn't quite sure what a cordial was. I had an idea. But it's any alcohol that has a sugar content.
Yes.
So, you know, you can come up with some cocktails that are very creative with a cordials license. But we are in the pipeline for a full liquor license, and we're excited about that. When I first opened Soleil, the vision was to remodel the space. It had been a Tasty Burger at the time. So we invested a lot of money doing the remodel, and we also designed the back for sit-down dinner. But as the pandemic came, it didn't make sense to open up for sit-down dinner. So along with, you know, this upcoming liquor license, we hope to utilize the building more fully than it's being
and
used
are they,
now.
Are they still astronomically expensive to get, or has there been some accommodation made for people doing their own smaller restaurant deal? Because you'd hear that these big chains that could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars were getting them, and then people that were just opening their own place or a couple of places.
Their whole neighborhoods that couldn't get any, not just individual restaurants.
That's true. So there are two ways that I know you can get a liquor license. One is the traditional, it's on the market, you spend several hundred thousand dollars for it. But I worked with Ayanna Pressley, our congresswoman, to get what's called a neighborhood liquor license. So, for example, I can serve alcohol right there at Soleil. If I close my business and move, I can't take that license with me. It is for the community. It is for that building. So the thinking behind that was to get these neighborhood liquor licenses for businesses so that they could have this opportunity, because, you know, when you go out to eat, one of the highest profit margins
is the liquor.
The liquor.
Exactly.
So these neighborhood liquor licenses now are in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, in areas that really, you know, don't have the dollars to spend $300,000, for a liquor license. So that's how we were able to work with our local politician to get one.
Yeah, this has been a crusade for quite some time. A liquor license, it's kind of been a scandal, I think.
Well, the congresswoman, when she was on the city council, was screaming about this. She's been doing this for years and years. We're talking to Cheryl Strauter in Nubian Square, Soleil. You know, I said before, and I couldn't tell from your body language if you agreed or not, it seems to me that after a long drought, there is a mini explosion of black-owned restaurants and great. I'm thinking when we knew you were coming in, there's obviously Nia Grace with her place with Darrell's, and she's got the place over at Northeastern we talked about. Douglas Williams just nominated, or he's in the semifinals for the Beard Awards, had the thing in the South End, and he opened in Newton about a year ago, and I hear it's exploding. I went to, have you been to Chef Dave's or heard of Chef Dave's in Chestnut Hill?
I've heard about it.
Callie Crossley sent me last. Oh my God.
Callie, also.
It is unbelievably great. So are these sort of aberrational, or is there a growth in black-owned restaurant community in Boston? As it seems to me, there is. There is.
I think there's always been an interest, and the barrier has been money. You know, how do you come up with the seed money to fulfill this dream that you've had for a while? And so now there are different opportunities and pockets of money, whether it's through a grant, whether it's angel funding. But there is ways for black restaurants now to open, and they are doing so.
Where'd you get, if you don't mind my asking, where'd you get your financing for your operation?
So some of it was personal savings, and the other is I have a great relationship with the city of Boston, and I applied to a couple of their programs, and I received some funding that way.
And what kind, I don't mean to go into great detail, but I think for people listening who want to open small businesses, whether it's a restaurant or another small independent business and don't have the resources, what kind of thing, what kind of resources, both financial and assistance, does the city provide for people like you a handful of years ago?
So the city has the Department of Neighborhood Development. They have different entities where, let me back up a little. When I decided I wanted to go to business, I became even more engaged in my community. I would go to community meetings. You know, if something was happening at City Hall, I'd go to City Hall. If some of the local politicians were speaking, then I would go. Because one of the things you want to do is be present, and you want to be engaged, and you want to be involved. So as you start to fill out these applications, there's a name that people can connect to. Oh, yeah, I know, I talked to her.
Yeah.
You know, there is value in your presence. And one of the things people often ask me is, you know, how did I get started? Where I get the money from? Be present. Be involved. You know, get active in your community. And so the city was there for me.
But how much resistance? When I said people like you a minute ago, you didn't have a business like this. And even if they loved your business plan and they loved your food, you were a risk. You were. So was it your presence that convinced them that, and a plan, I assume, that convinced them that, you're making a weird smile at me. Okay, what's the answer?
My presence is awesome.
It's electric.
That's right.
Okay, that's good enough for me.
But, you know, seriously, I didn't. But my parents were in business in the city. You know, I come from a pretty good legacy. And my prior background to this, I worked for the airlines. Like, I've always worked. I was always doing something. So when you think about restaurants, they tell you, because no bank would finance us because we fall into that category of a high risk. So the city took a chance on me, and I took a chance
on
the city.
Yeah.
You just mentioned the airline. Cheryl Strauss, tell us about running into Julia Child at Logan Airport.
I was working on the ticket counter, and I saw this very, very tall woman just come in, and you know, she had a couple of people with her. And I love cooking shows, and I've been watching them even before the hype of the Food Network. And I was like, she looks familiar. And I looked, and I said, wow, that is Julia Child. So we just started chatting, you know, just about food. And, you know, I'm sure the customers behind her were annoyed, but I'm standing there talking to this woman.
Yeah.
And I was telling her how, you know, I enjoy savory food. And we started talking about a couple of her favorite dishes and mine, and that's how I met Julia Child and had the opportunity not too long ago to actually be filmed. And that film of me making Coco Bon was superimposed on Julia Child making Coq au Vin. That was so exciting for
this
me.
This was the you
really
and Julia
cool.
at home.
Yes.
One of our colleagues, Megan Smith, wrote a piece about that. Yeah, that she's mm-hmm. talking about doing that. So that was kind of cool.
That was fun.
Cheryl, beyond the fact your food is really spectacular, and I'm going to try. What are those ribs? What are those things?
These are, well, see, now you have to come and pay.
What are they?
Because right. I brought, these are chicken wings.
Oh, that's perfect. We'll take those in a
ribs.
Second. I got it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that what you said a minute ago, I thought was really of great value, I would think, to somebody who wants to be you. This notion of being present. Spend another minute, the last minute or so, give more advice, which you were, I know you knew you were, to young people who want to be you eventually. What else would you urge them to do that may not be obvious?
I mentor young folks now from a couple of schools. One thing that I find is that they are quiet a lot, and I encourage them to ask questions, you know, try something, taste something. They don't like to eat, you know, different types of food, but I encourage them to step out and be different. Something has to make you different than the other three people that are standing here from your school. What's going to make you different? You have to be engaged. You have to dress, you know, you have to smile. You have to want to be here. So it's those soft skills that you learn early that will carry you through. So for me, it's all about asking, you know, talking, inquiring. That's what I tell young folks.
You exude a real happiness with your work. Is that, do you feel it?
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, you appear to be.
So tell us when. That's great.
Tell us when the Boston Public Market thing is going to. When should people expect that?
Down by Faneuil Hall.
Yeah. It's great. I assume people have been there. It's really terrific. Yep. Yeah.
Our target is about 3 weeks from now.
Oh, great.
There's only a couple of more things that we have to put into place. We've actually started gradually moving in. Terrific. We've done a test walkthrough of how it would flow. Our sign is actually up.
Oh, that's great.
So we're coming very soon.
Great. We'll be there. It's really great to have you here.
Hey,
thank
it was
you
great,
so much.
Great to meet you, and thank you so much for bringing us such great food. We had to get down there ourselves, Jim, and check it out.
Thrilled.
Absolutely. Cheryl Strada from Nubian Square Soleil, thank you very, very much. Congratulations
thank
on
you.
Your great success.
Good luck to
for
your
more information,
too.
By the way, on you can go to soleilboston.com. That's like sun in French, S-O-L-E-I-L, soleilboston.com. You can find out everything you need to know and check out the menu and all that kind of stuff. Thank you again, Cheryl, for coming in.
Thank you.
After a quick break, the latest in the ongoing George Santos saga as well. And we're also going to talk about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the new governor of Arkansas, cracking down on drag shows and using the word Latinx. We're going to talk about her with our media maven, Sue O'Connell. That's coming up, Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH, broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library, where we're offering free coffee, tea, and hot chocolate because it's so cold outside. And we are streaming at youtube.com/GBH News.
Trusted. Local. News. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, HD1 Boston, online at gbhnews.org. GBH News with NPR. What matters to you.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marge Regan. We're live at the library, streaming at youtube.com/GBHNews. And as we've said repeatedly, not only is it warm in here if you're cold or worried about being cold, but there's also free coffee, tea, and hot chocolate, courtesy of GBH News and the Newsfeed Cafe. Here, with no food, but to take on the social norms and abnormalities of the day.
But I'm hungry.
Is media, that's too bad, Sue. Is media maven Sue O'Connell. Sue is the co-publisher of Bay Windows and the South End News and contributor to Current, on NBCLX and NEC. And hello, Sue O'Connell.
What a buffet we have here today. Look at this. A little red velvet, a little salmon.
It's unbelievable. And the best cornbread I've ever had. Yeah. I mean, did you take a bite of that cornbread? That cornbread
is
unbelievable.
I
go there because I'm right around the corner in my house.
But there you go.
Yeah.
So you've been to Soleil yourself.
I have indeed, many times.
And you can give it a personal endorsement?
I am indeed.
Very good. Oh, there we go. Okay,
by the way,
thank
I just ate
much.
The cornbread. You were
cornbread's
right.
Cornbread's extraordinary. I mean, because usually it can be too dry, and that's really moist and soft.
Yeah. That's when Irish people make it.
Yeah, we haven't perfected our skills yet, have we?
No, the cooking, no.
Okay, so I make a great baked potato, though, Sue, let me tell you. So on Thursday, the House got rid of Representative Ilhan Omar. She's from Minnesota. She's a Democrat. She did make some very uninformed and anti-Semitic remarks in her history. Needless to say, she's not the only one in Congress, but she apologized for them. So do you think this is about anti-Semitism, or do you think it might be about something else?
No, it's not at all about anti-Semitism. If they were going to start throwing people up for anti-Semitism, homophobia, racism, or any of the other things, they could start with their own party and do that. I mean, you know, as you said, she did say things that were wrong and were distasteful and shouldn't have said them, and she apologized for it. But this is the time that they took to eject her and the amount of work that the House and Senate has gotten done thus far in January, I think I saw a stat that said it's the least number of bills passed, bills talked about, meetings held, because it is taking them so long because of these petty sort of arguments and things that they're having. And you know, again, what I like to say to my conservative and Republican friends when they say, well, you know, the Democrats do it all the time. There's no example that is like this of someone who has been a Republican who was thrown off a committee for something that they said, which was probably much more egregious. I guarantee.
Well, like Taylor Greene and Gosar were kicked off by the Democrats, but for reasons that had to do with our democracy.
Reasons. Yes.
And by the way, there are current Republican Holocaust deniers in the House, and they're not getting kicked off committees.
Right, and they're all wearing their little rifle pins on the floor now, which is a whole nother atrocity. So, you know.
Here is a little bit from Congresswoman Omar. She's on the House floor. This is before the vote to throw her off the Foreign Affairs Committee. Here she is.
My leadership and voice will not be diminished if I am not on this committee for one term. My voice will get louder and stronger, and my leadership will be celebrated around the world as it has been.
I have to say, I buy that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I'm sorry.
I am here to stay, and I am here to be a voice against harms around the world and advocate for a better world.
I mean, her profile rose dramatically.
Absolutely.
Not that it wasn't high to begin with.
You know, what you do is you leave her on the council, the committee, and then you don't pay any attention to her. I mean, and then, you know, you basically neuter any power that she has. But instead, you know, she's not a great lawmaker. I'm going to say there's not a whole bunch of stuff that I agree with her on. But at the same time, I would not, if I were trying to diminish the Democrats, I would not elevate her to a place where she can give a speech like that and fundraise like crazy. You know she's fundraising like crazy. But it's a mistake.
Now, Sue, you've sat in to do the show, and I'm sure you know the following to be true. We spend roughly half of our time preparing in general, and the other half of our time figuring out how we can work George Santos into the show.
It's not that hard.
And luckily for us, it appears, based upon some very savvy people in the Washington journalism community, the resignation, allegedly voluntary, which is total BS, by Santos from his two committee assignments had to happen so that McCarthy, the speaker, was not in a tough position saying, you're dumping Omar, but you're not dumping Santos.
Right.
So Santos steps down. So we have an opportunity to talk about this. This is one of the best ever. Here's this latest chapter. Here's a clip from a recording provided by this guy, Derek Myers. He gave it to the website Talking Points Memo. Myers was trying to get hired by Santos in his office, but the office had concerns about Myers' decision to publish secretly recorded tape from a court case when he was a journalist. Here's Myers responding to those concerns with George Santos popped in the middle.
But I can see that it's, like, concerning for you guys because you're like, oh, now can we trust this guy? Is he secretly recording this conversation right now? You know, things like that.
Look, from my understanding, recording in this building is a federal crime and you get 7 years.
I would never record with
Have
her.
Fun at your peril.
I
won't do it. So
the guy not only says I would never record while he's recording. Right. So perfect. The best line that was not in that quote, he says to Talking Points Memo, this is Derek Myers, I'm thinking to myself, I'm a threat and concern to this institution. George Santos, you're George Santos. I mean, talk about absurdity.
That's not the best line.
What is the best line?
The best line is when Santos gave him some parting advice as he was leaving.
Oh, I missed this.
And he told Myers, quote, stop going to Columbia for your diluted Botox.
Oh, yeah.
Botox.
I mean, this is why more gay men should be elected to office. So when you're getting, let go, you can really get a good dig in there that your Botox is bad.
Well, he said it. We got a big cut rate, $100 instead of $400.
I also enjoy that Santos is just leaning into the costume, right? You know, you think that this sweater and the jacket over it, the sort of boat shoe look, he's just totally wearing every single day. And I just really appreciate, I can't wait for the gay pride floats, the Santos gay pride floats.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm totally into this.
We're talking to Sue O'Connor.
So let's move down to Arkansas. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you may remember her. She was the press secretary for a while for Donald Trump. She won big time down in Arkansas when she ran for governor. And she seems to have a bee in her bonnet, not just about drag shows, but using the term Latinx. I mean, what does she care? If you're Latino and you're Latino, well, you want to call yourself Latinx, somebody else, what does she care? But apparently she's very upset about this because she's taken up those efforts to get rid of, well, basically she's banned the term Latinx in documents there, and she wants to shut down or impose big restrictions on drag shows.
Yeah, I mean, this is both of these things are not the most important things, I would say, in any state, including Arkansas, with the challenges that they have. And again, this is all just grandstanding on her part from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, making sure she's able to fundraise off these issues. First of all, regarding the drag show issue, how do you define a drag show, right? If the Pope shows up and he's wearing his dress, is that a drag show? Right? If I show up and I'm wearing a tie and I'm on the common in Arkansas and I'm reading poetry, is that a drag show? You know, it's almost completely unenforceable to ban a drag show without the definitions that they need. Again, it's harmful and hurtful to those who care about these things. It's harmful and hurtful to trans kids. There are real people who are getting this message and it's hurting them, but it's absolutely ridiculous. Now, regarding the Latinx thing, I'm not in a position to talk about what the Latino, Latina, Latinx community should call themselves. They are.
Exactly.
Right? And
exactly.
I have met as many people who want to say Latinx. They're usually younger people, younger generation. I've also met Latino and Latina, older people who think it's ridiculous. And you know what? Let them sort it out the way we all sort out what we all
want to be called,
right?
Yes.
So it's not an issue for the government. I mean, talk about the Republicans with their concern about government overreach. Is there anything more overreach than banning drag shows and saying you can't say Latinx?
Yeah, but one place I totally disagree with you, and I hope I am wrong, is this is exactly what the campaign... You said this is not what people care about. I use this term advisedly. This is Ron DeSantis light for those who are not. It's not quite as sadistic yet as what DeSantis is trying to do. It's symbolism. It's sort of like Trump. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the specific policies that he ran on because he didn't have any. He hated immigrants. He was a racist. Mm-hmm. He was all the things that most voters weren't comfortable saying or publicly at least. He said them publicly. And now DeSantis is saying them, and now Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who, by the way, is going to be giving the State of the Union response for the Republican Party after Biden gives the State of the Union. It's basically to say to the anti-wokeism crowd, I'm with you.
Right.
I'm your person.
And it's also to, as we're learning from polling, as we should have known anyway from life experience, the Hispanic and Latino community is not voting in bloc. And they also don't have the same issues. So She's also able to sort of thread a needle here with older, more conservative mm-hmm. Latino and Latina saying, listen, I'm with you on the Latinx issue. I'm going to ban it completely. So, yes, to your point, it definitely is a smart thing to do politically. But it's, again, it's not helping feed children in Arkansas.
It's like being against critical race theory
yep.
when it's not
taught
in any of your schools.
Right.
Listen
you
to
know?
This from Judy in Danvers. I find it incongruous that the same people who are against drag shows will subject their little girls to being paraded around as little sex symbols in all these beauty contests.
I made that point last week on Callie's show. It's like
yeah.
if you are worried about sexualization of children, which is a valid concern, stop doing toddler beauty pageants.
Yeah.
Don't let children dress up in these risque outfits with makeup on until they're 15 or 16.
Yeah, at 7.
Stop sexualizing children
old,
at
yeah.
7. But
it's terrible.
Did you read Marjorie when she was in the Boston Herald?
I've heard she used to call it
prostitutes.
Yeah, prostitutes.
Pretty good
prostitutes.
Term. Doesn't that describe it pretty well?
Yeah, well, some of these kids were, I mean, they weren't tossed, but they were like 5 years old. I mean, they're very, very young children in these kind of contests, which I kind of found kind of creepy. So tell us about blood donation rules involving gay men, bisexual men.
So after, gosh, how long has it been? I don't even know how many years that the ban has been, that gay men were unable to donate men. Of course, it happened in the 1980s during the HIV and AIDS crisis when we didn't know a lot about where, how blood was infected. You know, fast forward all the way here, some, you know, 30, 40 years to 2023. And until last year, they were still saying if you were a man who had had sex with another man at any time, you couldn't donate blood, even though none of the science supported that, even though there were other groups that were much higher risk to being HIV positive or having AIDS than gay men, but they continued to ban it. And then they made an exception that if you, I think a year or two ago, that if you were in a monogamous relationship, you could donate blood. And now they have changed it a little bit further ahead. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, they're revising it, saying that you can be a donor. The only thing that would keep you from donating is what your recent sexual activity is. So it's a long way from a complete prohibition on gay men giving blood, but it's still not where I think they need to be in regard to the science of what they do when they
collect
your blood.
Where should they be? Because I don't know the science.
I mean, I'm not a member of the FDA, but I'm pretty sure it should really go with what I think Canada has, which is that if you've had sex with someone that outside of a monogamous relationship, then you can't give blood within 6 months. But it's still very restrictive, I think, and I don't think it's not fair. It continues not to be fair. It sends the wrong message about gay men. It sends the wrong message about blood donation, and it gives the wrong message about HIV. But at the same time, you know, it's another step forward, so we should take it.
You know, speaking of gay men and gay women, an early champion, and you know this far better than I, having been there in the early days, just died this past week. Former mayor of Cambridge, probably the first or second name I heard when I moved to Cambridge mm-hmm. 30-plus years ago. For people who didn't know Alice, when she was a school committee person, an activist, a city councilor, a mayor, a state rep, tell us a little bit about Alice Wolfe.
Yeah, Alice Wolfe, who just passed away from and Cambridge, you know, Boston and Massachusetts get a lot of the highlight about same-sex marriage and marriage equality. But, you know, in Cambridge was the first place in the United States, this town that gave out marriage licenses and beat Boston to the punch, if you will, started giving them out midnight. And a lot of that was from Alice Wolfe's work. She was known as an honorary lesbian for a very, very long time.
Now,
I mean, it was, you know, you could not swing a dead cat at an LGBT event without Alice Wolfe showing up. She was a tireless advocate for all sorts of things. We're talking about LGBT rights. And it's important to note, I always think, you know, as we go through history, we think, oh, gee, it was great. It was so easy. We got same-sex marriage rights. She worked to make sure that Cambridge had domestic partnership benefits before anyone else did. When it was not popular to be supportive of gay rights in Massachusetts, she was. We always used to joke at Bay Windows that there's this moment on the ship, you know, where lawmakers started to realize who had been either on the fence, not supportive, or against same-sex marriage when it became clear that it was going to pass. And they wanted to make sure their Wikipedia entry showed
yeah.
that they supported same-sex marriage. So when it didn't matter anymore, they would come over and say, oh, yes, we're for same-sex marriage. Yes, it's marching gay pride. Alice Wolfe had been there from the beginning, you know, had always been working for rights for gay citizens. And, you know, what a personal history, you know.
Well, you know,
well, I should say, escaped Nazism yeah. in the late 30s with her family.
Yeah, from Austria. Yeah. They got out of Austria in 1938. But when I was reading the story about her by Brian Marquardt and the Marquardt,
yeah.
in the Globe, excuse me, which is a great job, I think, to write obituaries.
He's the obituary guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful job. Anyway, it said, talk about a public servant, that for nearly 35 years, she was either a school committee member, a city councilor, a mayor, or a state representative.
Yep.
And she died, she said, at 89. She had leukemia, it said, but 35 years serving the city of Cambridge. I mean, that is a lot of devotion.
And working for progressive issues. In a, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say they're popular now, but they're certainly more popular now. A lot of the civil rights, access to safe abortion care, all the things that we care about now, Alice had been doing for 30 years.
You know, we're talking to Sue O'Connell. Sue, every Monday we have the Revs on, mm-hmm. Emmett Price mm-hmm. and Irene Monroe. And we often have a disagreement about where the Pope is moving on certain issues. And I really feel bad that Irene and Emmett aren't here today, because I think they would endorse the fact that this Pope has come out and endorsed giving people the middle finger, I think is so enlightened and so ahead of its time. What do you think? What do you think about it?
I agree. You know, what the Pope did was, you know, his Twitter account is very exciting because he shares, I follow the Pope, he shares with us some of the religious and spiritual aspects of things you don't consider, like your fingers.
Exactly. Right?
And who knew that there were spiritual aspects and stories
who
to
knew?
Go with each one, your thumb,
exactly.
your index finger. And the Pope went on to talk about how the importance of your middle finger,
your finger
is, and how it gives honesty and its directness.
Yes.
And, you know, it could have been translation, you know. Could have been somebody working in the office. But they deleted the tweet that spoke about the love of the Pope, loving the middle finger, giving what we call the car signal here
yeah.
in Massachusetts, right? When you want to really communicate something in the car. And they changed it to what? The third finger?
Oh. The third finger. Yeah.
So
yeah.
they rewrote it. What are the qualities, Marjorie, of the middle finger did?
Well, I think he nailed it, really. When he talked about what the middle finger is really about is honesty.
Exactly right.
Because you are expressing your honesty in that particular moment. I mean, it may not be the kindest moment you've ever had,
yep, but it's true.
It is right there.
I would have left it up.
Yeah.
Well, I would have, you know, there's some, there are a lot of tweets in response to this. Some are beautiful. This guy, Joe Vazil, tweeted, it is also the finger that's most important for driving in New Jersey.
Yep.
So there are a lot of things like that.
Totally get behind
and you really got
to
congratulate the Pope for being ahead of his
He's moving ahead here. Look at this. He loves the gaze, and he loves the middle finger.
Yes. You know, by the way, can we talk about that for a second? We got into it just for a minute with Irene the other day about this.
Shocking.
His original statement was, which was a modest advance, but troubling to many, the advance rather, same-sex relationships are not crimes, and they shouldn't be crimes. Bishops shouldn't call it that. They're sins, but they're not crimes. But speaking of translation, I mean this one seriously, as opposed to the middle finger thing. It seemed to me when he issued the clarification, he went way beyond that and basically said, I didn't mean it was a sin, sex between people of the same gender. He said sex outside of marriage, whether it's between a man and a man, a woman and a woman, or whoever.
Yeah,
it's between.
It's a sin.
I thought that was a huge advance for a Pope. But Irene,
you're a Catholic, or you were a Catholic. Almost everything's a sin.
Yeah.
Right?
But he wasn't even saying it was a sin as relates to same-sex couples.
Right. I
would go further, Jim, and say the first thing he said was a major thing. He didn't even need to correct it, because what is happening? I mean, if you think of the Catholic Church as a business, and you think of the Pope as, or a political organization, you think of the Pope as the head of it, he's got all this internal fighting. He has these conservatives coming after him. I think he would be further along if he didn't have to deal with the fact that there are these conservative bishops who are really gunning for him.
Oh, absolutely.
The followers of Benedict.
Yeah, the Benedict, and you've got the whole, you know, other popes in line to take his place. He doesn't want to give them too much power. So when he finally decides or passes away that he's not replaced by a very, very conservative pope who they thought was going to come after Ratzi, that's going to roll back his progress. So he has to be careful around that. He just can't come out. But also, there are countries all around the world where you can be killed by the police for being gay. You can be jailed for your entire life. So when the Pope says to those Christian nations, those Catholic nations,
that are the ones,
it's not a crime, that's the message. I'm less concerned about it, whether it's a sin or not.
And the,
that's the message.
And the other thing about the business part, where is the Catholic Church growing by leaps and bounds? In some of those very same countries. In African countries
South
and
America.
Some South American countries.
Yep.
So this is where the congregations are filled, and certainly not in the United States, where things are dwindling for the Catholics. So I think that's an issue, too, because this is where he wants the church to keep growing.
He puts it right at the same level of, you know, cap of the death penalty, right? Yeah. He's against the death penalty as well, you know. So I think those are the political criminal messages that he's sending.
Don't you remember Limbo when you were little?
I did. It freaked me out. Limbo freaked me out.
Yeah, people had to get the baby baptized, like, within days of birth, because if the baby died before the baby was baptized, it was off to limbo.
Yeah.
And you said
I never went to first communion. I skipped first communion because I thought it was stupid.
Oh, my
goodness. I went through the whole thing, I was in catechism class. We got to the part where we were supposed to go into the confession, and I said, why am I telling a priest my sins when I can just tell God directly? And why is praying a punishment? Shouldn't I want to pray? So when it was my turn to go in, I just went out the back door. So I received my Holy Communion without having gone through the rites.
Well, before you go,
that's right.
That kind of honesty makes me want to give you the finger.
That's honest.
I mean, that's
very honest. That's sharing.
Sue O'Connell, thank you very
much. Catholic police are coming for
you. They're coming for you.
They're coming for me.
And they're always coming for me, so it's okay, Sue. Okay, we've been speaking with our media maven, Sue O'Connell, co-publisher of Bay Windows and South End News.
Thank you, Sue.
And contributor to Current on NBC, LX, and NECN. Thanks a lot, Sue. After a quick break, wait till you hear this. We're going to be in for a real treat, a live Music Friday performance from the chamber group Castle of Our Skins, about to debut their first studio recording after 10 years, making waves throughout Boston in the world of education and chamber music. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 GBH. We are broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library, and we are streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. We're live at the Boston Public Library, streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews. And as we've said, because it's a very cold day, it's a good place to warm up, good place in a minute or two to listen to some spectacular music, and a place where you can get a free cup of coffee, tea, or hot chocolate on the Newsfeed Cafe and GBH News. It is time for Live Music Friday, starting our February out strong. Here at our desk is Ashley Gordon. She's Artistic Executive Director and violist. Did I pronounce that word right? Violist, yeah. Thank you. With a group she co-founded called Castle of Our Skins. They're celebrating 10 years of music and music education centering black artistry and local composers you might not be familiar with, like Frederick C. Tillis. More on him in a moment. The string quartet consists of musicians playing two violins, a viola, and a cello, and they're weeks away from the American release of their first ever studio recording titled Homage, Chamber Music from the African Continent and Diaspora. It was created in collaboration with the incredible UK-based pianist who I was listening to this morning, Samantha Ege. Samantha couldn't be with us in person for practical reasons. She does join us now on Zoom, I hope, somewhere. We'll find out in a second, from the UK. Samantha, are you there?
I think she's there.
Not there yet, but she will be. Ashley, okay. It's great to have you. Welcome to Boston Public
thanks
Radio.
For
thanks for being here.
Yeah, so thank you so much. We got to hear during the breaks, and you guys absolutely sound amazing. But tell people about Castle of Our Skins. What is it all about?
Sure. Our name comes from a poem by Nikki Giovanni, which I think encapsulates everything that we do. And the poem basically says, if we're all in prison in the Castle of Our Skins, then that's the reality. Let our skin be our castle, our palace. We'll fill it with beautiful things, adorn it with beautiful things. So cultural pride. representation and celebration through and through.
And you don't just do music. You do education. You focus on kids. You're going to be doing some stuff in the library. We'll talk about it in a few minutes.
We are, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Later this month, we'll be here at the Boston Children's Library as well as at the Boston Children's Museum. Music as a violist is pretty central to what we do, but often interdisciplinary. So I consider my historian and visual artist and my dancers all part of the crew, the Coos crew, we like to call them, and very much educational. So whether we're on a concert stage or in a classroom, we are interested in fostering cultural curiosity and sharing out our learnings.
And look who just appeared, Samantha Agge, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan, and a buddy of yours. It's great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much. I can't believe she's over in Great Britain. I mean, this
is amazing technology.
Technology is really amazing.
Samantha, how'd you hook up with these people? What's the connection? How'd you all come together to work together?
Well, through technology, that's how I learned about Castle of Our Skins. I was living in Singapore at the time and exploring the world of diverse composers for myself. And through that exploration, I learned of the amazing work that Ashley Gordon and Anthony R. Green were doing with Castle of Our Skins. And a few years ago, we connected in person in Boston.
You know what I found amazing, and I guess it's my ignorance, but you think of there being so much racism in classical music. I don't mean necessarily intentional, but you go to the Boston Symphony, see
one... intentional.
Okay, intentional or unintentional. You see one black guy playing the cello, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it. We've talked about the symphony with people from the symphony. But I was reading about back in Chicago in the 1930s and 1920s, African-American musicians performing there, and I was surprised. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, the Chicago Renaissance, and certainly Samantha can fill in as well, but the Chicago Renaissance, the Harlem Renaissance, Langston Hughes and Florence Price and Margaret Bonds and on the south side of Chicago having a whole entire community, if you think of the great migrations and millions of African Americans from the south to the north coming for work and for industry, but creating ultimately a nexus, a community, the Association for the Advancement of Creative Musicians, also sort of starting through that and being able to ultimately find communion, find space, find agency in spaces like orchestras, as you referenced, which don't provide that.
Yeah.
Samantha, could you tell us, one of the composers, correct me if I'm wrong, either of you, on this album that's about to be released is Frederick C. Tillis, and who I learned a lot about in the last 24 hours, including the fact that he lived in Amherst, mm-hmm. right on the other side of the state for a while. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Frederick Tillis, if you would, Samantha.
Well, actually, Tillis was a new composer to me, and I learned about his music through Ash. So I think Ash is the best.
Fair enough. So fill us in, Ash.
Sure, yeah. I mean, taught at University of Amherst for many, many years. There's now a hall that's named after him as he passed away in 2 years ago, I want to say. I've had the great fortune of connecting with his daughter, Pamela Tillis, who's very much a champion and is so supportive of this album and getting his music out. Frederick Tillis, you'll get a chance to hear two movements of his spiritual fantasy number 12. And I have to say number 12 because he wrote literally dozens of spiritual fantasies. He was really inspired by that medium.
If you tell us, Ashley, what you and your colleagues, who you should identify if you don't mind, mm-hmm. are going to play, you can gently put down your headphones and join your colleagues, and we'll talk to Samantha while you're getting ready. What are we going to hear first?
Sure, yeah. So the whole entire album, People of Color, in terms of the music, in terms of the musicians, but I have with us Gabriela Diaz on first violin, Matthew Vera on second violin, Francesca McNeely on cello, myself on viola, and then Samantha virtually through the interwebs and digital downloads on the CD. So we're going to start with Crucifixion from Frederick C. Tillis' Spiritual Fantasy No. 12 for string quartet, which is also sub-called He Never Said a Mumbling Word.
Fabulous. So as you join your colleagues, Samantha, before they start, you're interviewed, one that Marjorie and I read this morning, and your answer to a question, the question doesn't even matter. You said, I'd always assume women didn't compose back then. Could you finish the thought and put that in some context for us?
Absolutely. When I think about my music education growing up, I realized that there was this sort of subliminal message that women didn't compose back then, this idea that women in music is a relatively recent phenomenon. And as a musicologist, as well as a performer, what has really inspired my work is actually undoing that myth mm-hmm. that I had somehow absorbed through my education, and not only revealing that women did compose back then, but also as a performer sharing the amazing works that they wrote with audiences.
I had a feeling that might be the answer. We're now about to hear Crucifixion. Welcome to you all.
That was absolutely spectacular. You know, Ashley, how did you choose the viola? How did you come to choose the viola?
Yeah, I like to say through the age of reason. But right. I first started on piano, and then in fourth grade, public school education, started violin, and then in college, again, age of reason, switched to the bigger and better instrument of viola.
Okay, we hope your violinists don't take that the wrong way. You're already over there. And Samantha, I was also, you know, when I was reading about Florence Price, I noticed, of course, the dreaded local angle. She went to the New England Conservatory back in 1903. But tell us about her. I don't know if she was her protege, but a woman who also made great inroads, Margaret Bonds.
Yes, well, Florence Price and Margaret Bonds were definitely child prodigies, and it was their passion for music that their parents picked up on. So Florence Price was born in 1888, and Margaret Bonds was born in 1912. So Margaret Bonds, in many ways, represents the next generation of Black women composers, and Florence Price was her mentor. And there's an incredible piece by Price called Fantasy Nègre, which is based on a spiritual that she dedicated to a 15-year-old Margaret Bonds. And I can say it's a very difficult piece to play. So it gives you a really strong idea of just what an amazing talent Margaret Bonds was.
And that Fantasy Nègre, if I can say, is recorded by Dr. Samantha Ege. So just to give you a shout out there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what about the new album? What's the deal? When is that going to happen? When can we get it?
So it's already available digital download. We recorded this May 2022. I had the great fortune to, through a Torch residency, you can probably talk more about that, Samantha, but go over to Oxford and to London to record. And then it's digital download available through Laurel, the distributor. And then stateside, if you still have a CD player and want to get CDs in March, you'll be able to get it here in the States.
You know, actually, before we go to Samantha again, can you talk a little bit more? We're getting texts about, explain the stuff you do with kids, what you're going to do with the library, for example.
Sure.
And how do people find out when these, both your performances and things like that, are available?
Yes, I think February 24th will be here, and I'm looking at someone from my team just to make sure that's the right date. But the Boston Children's Library, we've done many programs over the years. So I have been an educator for over 20 years and really enjoy working with kids, again, sharing out our learnings. So we have a program called Play Songs and Games, which will be two sort of 30-minute drop-in, drop-out opportunities to learn African-American and Caribbean folk songs and play songs that I'll get to teach you. It's totally intergenerational, and you'll be able to have fun that way. And then February 12th at the Boston Children's Museum, 11:30 and 2 o'clock, if I can remember that correctly, an original educational workshop, interactive, that we've designed called The Little History, which tells the story of different figures in Black history through original poetry, music, and interaction, all kid-friendly.
Mm-hmm. You know, Samantha, AA, we are here in Boston. You are, of course, on Zoom in Great Britain. But I wondered, I would assume there is here, that you had to be very creative about rehearsing with your fellow musicians during the pandemic. What kind of things did you do to be able to keep playing with other musicians?
Well, I'm primarily a soloist. So actually, the concert that Carsten Vaskins and I did at the Sheldonian Theatre in Oxford was really one of my first big collaborative events. And it was a very strange time, to do something like this. Especially because obviously there were still restrictions, but it was incredible to work towards something like this because it was a very new experience for me, and it was just such a privilege to bring the musicians to Oxford and celebrate this incredible repertoire.
By the way, we should say it's castleskins.org if people want to learn
castleskins.org and at castleskins on Facebook, no more Twitter. And Instagram.
No more Twitter because Elon Musk?
Because Elon Musk and all the things.
Well, at least there's one principled person in this crowd. Tell us what you're going to play for us again, please.
Yeah, so the same string quartet. We're going to do the second movement called Wade in the Water. And a recognizable spiritual and is as tumultuous as the name suggests.
Can I tell you, I heard you rehearsing this at noon. It is so full of life. It is just unbelievable.
It's a favorite. We've played this, many times at this point, and it's still a favorite to come back
to. So do you want to ease your way on over there again with your same colleagues? And Samantha, how do we find your work? I did this morning, but for those who are learning about you now, how do we find your work?
Well, I have recordings on all digital platforms. You can buy my physical albums. My recording with Castle of Askins is actually my fourth album, but my first chamber music album, which is very exciting. And then my website, SamanthaEgge.com.
And Egge, we should say, is spelled E-G-E.
Thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome.
So here it is, Wade in the Water, and you are really, really in for a treat. Spectacular.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Boston Zone's Castle of Our Skins. We want to thank Samantha Ege, who joined us on Zoom from Great Britain, and our quartet here in the Boston Public Library, violinist Gabriela Diaz, Matthew Vera, violist Ashley Gordon, that we've just been speaking to, and cellist Francesca McNeely. Thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you all so much.
If you want to get more information about the upcoming performances, educational events, plus their new album, Homage, go to castleskins.org. That's one word, castleskins.org. Thank you again. That was absolutely spectacular.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, coming up, from the highbrow and inspiring to lowbrow and not so inspiring.
This is so true. I'm so glad you're doing this.
How often do you need to wash your blue jeans? Or your socks, or your underwear, or your...
idea.
It was your idea, Jim.
Thank you, go ahead.
Or your pillowcases. Well, it might be less often or more often than you think. We'll open the lines to get your takes on washing your clothes. How often? 877-301-8970 is the number to call or text at. 877-301-8970. You're listening to Boston Public Radio live from the Boston Public Library and streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Brody and Marjorie Egan are live at the library. Stream at youtube.com/GBHnews. I was about to say, if you come, you get free coffee, tea, or hot chocolate. Forget about it. If they're just showing up now, then I got them free anything. So we were giving away free coffee, tea, and hot chocolate.
Jimmy, shut that
but
down.
But not anymore. All Earlier in the week, this is humiliating after Castle of Our Skins, but it is what it is. So who we are, I guess.
It's our wheelhouse, Jim.
Early in the week, we talked about how often you need to wash your own, as Marjorie said, holes and souls in the shower. We're continuing the conversation today about what you put on your body, your shirts, your skirts, your jeans, your sheets. Over on TikTok, this user, Allison Delperdang, I think is how you say her name, sparked a debate of how often she wears something before she throws it in the wash. Here she is.
When I was younger, my parents always made us wear pajamas, like, more than, like, multiple nights in a row because they weren't dirty. And I still do that as an adult. I've worn these, like, 3 nights in a row. So I need to know if, like, as adults, we're still doing that? Are we wearing pajamas multiple nights? What's the situation?
She is an influencer for that. So what is your situation, to quote Allison there? Obviously, things like socks and underwear need to be cleaned frequently, like every time you wear them. What about things that aren't directly touching? I'm not going to say this, bits and pits. I just did. That's Marjorie's too. Like jeans, for example, or your sheets or your pillowcases. Experts say if your jeans aren't sweaty, dirty, or stained, they don't have to be washed often. Some of them say at all. What is your rule? Again, not for your body. We did that the other day. For things that touch your body. 877-301-8970. So what is your rule of thumb?
Well,
your rules of thumb?
Well, I just want to say that I learned a lot in preparation for this segment, Jim.
Like
well,
what?
I didn't know you're supposed to throw your shoes in the washing machine. Did you
shoes?
Hear that part? Shoes in the washing
machine. Why is that?
I guess to clean out the insides of your shoes. I did not know that. I did not know that we were all in danger of getting all sorts of horrible things if we didn't wash our pillowcases enough, like every second or third day. Did not
know
that.
How often do you wash your pillowcases?
Once a week when I wash my bed sheets. Yeah. How about you?
I buy new ones.
Oh, you buy new ones. Okay.
Whoever heard of one? No, actually, maybe once a month or something.
And that if you sleep naked, you should be washing your linens a lot more than if you've got those pajamas on that influencer was just talking about. Yeah. Your shoes or at least the insoles in the washing machine at least once a month. You know why?
Yeah.
Because inside your shoes is the perfect breeding ground for fungus.
Okay, fine. I would say when you people call here, particularly
that's
men.
That's why you see all those commercials.
No, they're disgusting. Our number is 877-301-8970. I would hazard a guess that any man who calls here who is at least college age or older would admit that he washed his sheets when he took them home to his mother at the end of every semester.
Yeah, I think in colleges there's not a lot of, or the teenage rooms. Yeah. You know, sometimes you go into your teenager's room, and not only is there junk all over the bed, but inside the bed are a lot of crumbs, you know, from potato chips and sandwiches they brought in their room.
Yeah.
And then you wonder why you might have mice in there, and it's a big problem for the teenagers.
And does anybody wash their shoes? I'm really curious.
In the washing machine.
I have occasionally, if I spilled some crap on them or stepped in something, mm-hmm. I've watched a sneaker or two.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who, as a matter of course, just decides to wash their shoes. I've not washed
any shoes, but you have to be on the lookout for all these different germs. E. coli, Staph. I cannot even pronounce this.
Staphylococcus.
Yes, that's on the prowl, Jim. You're going to be watch out for that. That bacteria can be everywhere, and they're common in your bed. They're in your bed.
When you were younger, I'm trying to think back to college days. Did you ever wash your clothes wearing them in the shower? No, I'm totally serious.
No, I never did that.
Yeah, I did that. I'm sure I'm not alone. 877-301-8970. Someone just wrote and said, I have not bathed myself or anything else in weeks, and I'm in the audience right now. Can you tell? As a matter of fact, we can. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you being here.
Paul from Worcester wants to know if the frequency of washing your blue jeans depends on how often you go commando. I think that's a very important question.
No, but actually, it's in one of the articles. They say if you don't wear underwear,
you got to wash them more
often.
But
isn't that pretty obvious?
Yes,
obviously?
It would be very obvious. And some other texter says, didn't we learn from the showering conversation the other day that the amount required of washing depends on whether you are sleeping with them? I don't get that one. Do you get that?
Sleeping in them, or I don't know, they write another text. Yeah, but the other issue is, even if you are not soiling, or soiling, what is mm-hmm. the verb? Soiling?
Soiling.
Your clothing, like your jeans, for mm-hmm. example, they're exposed to things. I mean,
I get pen marks all over mine.
Well, I'm talking about, that's not dirt. I mean,
it is. You don't want to go someplace.
How do you get pen marks on the bottom of your jeans?
It's hard. No, on the thighs of your jeans.
Thighs.
Yeah, I get a lot of pen marks on my thighs.
Well, can I give you a suggestion?
Because you're writing in the pen.
Well, stop writing on your lap. I mean,
I'm not writing on my lap, Jim. It just kind of gets down there. I get pen marks all over everything.
You do?
I probably have more pens than most Americans, or it's healthy. I have hundreds
of
pens.
That's fabulous.
Couch, and it's very difficult to keep pens off things. But it doesn't look good to have pens all over your all over your thighs.
877-301-8970. We're completing the loop that we started the other day. We talk about washing your own body. Luckily, this will be the last installment of this discussion. We're now talking about things that touch your body, whether it's a sheet, a pillowcase, your shoes, your jeans, and things like that.
Amanda in Jamaica Plain, where they know everything. What's
hey, Amanda,
your deal?
What's up?
So all of this sounds fantastic.
It does.
But my question is, how do you keep track of everything? One day for this, one week for
Excellent
this,
point.
One month for that. If you have two of a spreadsheet, you know?
A spreadsheet.
Post-it notes. Like, how do you know when to do things if you're doing everything?
So is that an excuse for not doing anything in your case, or you're just asking an honest question?
Both.
Oh, both?
Okay.
Thank you.
Amanda, I've got the answer.
No, you're
for
organized. You answer
I
the question.
I am a totally disorganized person,
yeah,
but I don't have any problems with this kind of thing.
What is it?
You just put the dirty clothes in the hamper, and when you get enough clothes in the hamper, you wash them. Now, sometimes you do have to separate them because they say that you should wash your bedclothes in very hot water, Jim.
They do?
That's why in some of the newer washing machines, they have bedding on there, you know, so it can be a special. They say it should be up to, I think it was like, I forget how many degrees it's supposed to be to get the bad things out of there, including bed bugs, which can be a problem in people's beds, of course. But that's how you do it. You just throw everything in the hamper.
So did that help you out, Amanda, or no?
Yeah, I mean, that's the old standby. If it looks dirty, it's dirty.
Exactly.
I think that's good enough. Try that and get back to us in a couple of weeks. Amanda, thank you for the call. By the way, I believe when you used the expression bed clothes a second ago, that was the first time that had been used by any human being under 100 since 1972, I think, or maybe 73.
Didn't you used to hear that when you were a kid?
My grandmother,
well,
like
not,
60 years ago,
about,
said that.
They were always talking about bed clothes. 877-301-8970.
Suze, I think, in Framingham. What's your deal?
Hey, you've only talked to me several times.
I know. Suze. I forgot your name. It's Suze, right?
Yes, I'm unforgettable.
You are unforgettable, obviously. What's up, Suze?
I wash my shoes all the time in the washing machine.
You do?
Well, for one thing, I don't wear socks a lot because I have a dog who eats the socks.
That's a problem.
And, you know, like, he's already been out the tough three times for surgery.
Oh.
So I just don't wear socks. And if you have dogs, occasionally you step in things.
That's right.
So, you know, you hose them off as best you can. And I don't wash them with anything else in the washer. You know, I toss them bleach in the washer afterwards. But, yeah, I toss them in the washer.
So, Suze, let's go back. Your dog has been operated on 3 times because he ate your socks?
Yes.
That's actually sad. And how is
it's awful.
And how is the dog now?
Oh, he's great. And he's very popular out at Tufts. He's an Irish wolfhound.
Great.
He's 160 pounds.
Wow.
The first time he ate a sock, a towel, and a hat.
That's beautiful.
Now,
well, Suze, we're glad he's well, and we'll remember how to pronounce your name next time you join us. Thank you, Suze, for the call. We appreciate it.
Now, Susan from Cranston has some words of wisdom here.
Cranston, to
she
you.
Says pillowcases daily, daily, or flip them, then change them every other day, sheets weekly, and jeans when they can walk to the washer.
Well, by the way, I should have said that. That's what a lot of people say. Maybe my mother said that. When they can walk on their own, when they sort of say, you know, when you were younger, don't you remember when your jeans sort of stood up by themselves?
Yeah, yeah.
If you took them off kind of thing? I don't think you really do.
How about towels?
That's an excellent
question. Well, you know, that's kind of a dispute. People get upset about that. Mm. They think, you know, like teenagers think that they use a towel once after they've taken a shower to dry off, which means they're pretty clean, which means the towel's not dirty.
Excellent
they think
point.
That's a dirty towel. It's not a dirty towel. They just clean
so
themselves off.
So where do you fall? Since you raised that beautiful issue, where do you fall on that issue,
Margaret? I am once a week on the towels, once a week on the sheets. And I'm going to be – now I'm embarrassed. I'm not changing my pillowcases all the time like everybody says you should. But somebody said that human beings shed a pound of skin a week, Jim. So it's all in your bed.
I read this morning in anticipation of this really important discussion that you shed 500,000 skin cells every time you sleep in your bed, assuming you sleep the normal 6, 7, 8 hours. 500,000 of those skin cells. What do you think of that?
I think that's
a lot of skin cells.
Exactly. 877-301-8970. Al on the road.
Hey,
thank
Al.
You for calling.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Excellent. I think,
We don't wash our shoes in my house, but we have a boot dryer for my kids' cleats.
Oh.
Because those things are horrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the boot dryer dries them out and gets rid of the stink, and it's an absolute game changer.
Really? I've never heard of this. What's it called, a boot dryer?
Yeah, it's great on days like today, too. You put your boots on or your shoes on there for like 20 minutes before you go out.
Wow.
And you put warm, toasty shoes on when you walk out the door. Definitely changes your whole perspective of the day.
By the way, that is a very good point. You know what we didn't talk about when cold weather before? I forgot. A great thing to do. You mentioned those sock warmers and hand warmers and kind of thing. One of the great things to do is to put like your jeans in the dryer before you go out and put on hot jeans when you're entering the cold outside, which is terrific.
You're right,
Al,
Jim.
We'll be checking out boot dryers.
Doesn't
Thank
get
you.
Much better than that.
No,
listen
it doesn't.
To this. This is from Jeff
Thank
in
you.
Andover. We heard a story of a mom who put 7 fitted sheets on her son's bed when she dropped him off at boarding school and begged him
brilliant.
To take one off
that
every
is brilliant.
2 weeks.
Is that brilliant or is that brilliant?
Yeah.
That is really
just,
unbelievable.
I just looked up pictures of boot dryers.
Boot dryers,
yeah,
and
boot dryers.
What do you think?
Well, you can get one for $100 from L.L. Bean. I'm sure you can get them from Amazon.
Well, you should
here's
not get them from L.L.
Bean.
How much?
Boot dryer for $49.99.
Well,
here's one for $26.
You're actually
36.
Ruining something.
I
Next
am?
Week is Pledge.
Uh-huh.
We have the Jim and Marjorie boot dryer for $10 a month or $120 all at once, and you become a sustaining member. 877-301-8970. Can I just say
Oh, listen to this.
Yeah.
Dry Guy Force.
What is that?
The forceful boot dryer.
Really?
Yeah. Dry Guy Force.
We obviously have missed out
That's
on something.
That's $65.
Wait, there's a photograph of it now from Dick's Sporting Goods.
Exactly.
Oh, is that what you were looking at?
That was a different one.
That's incredible.
But it is pretty funny. It's like these two stilts, and you put your boots upside down on the stilts.
And they dry.
And it dries them all off. Well, you're supposed to dry them off because it's warm and humid and dark inside your boots,
very
Jim.
Dark.
And all sorts of things can happen in there when it's warm and
like
humid.
Like what? What has ever happened in
well,
a boot that
bad,
you're wearing?
You get bad growth.
You do.
And they make commercials for that.
They do.
On television that are really disgusting.
Yeah,
to watch.
Okay. Well, this whole discussion
Gina
is disgusting.
In Bell Ricka.
Hi, Gina. It's Marjorie's
Gina.
Idea, and I'm telling you the truth. It was her idea. Go ahead. Gina, what's up?
I wash my sneakers all the time, and when I want to dry them, I put them on my old steam radiator. They're washed, they're dry, and I don't even need a boot dryer.
That is incredible.
Wait a minute. How
steam
do you
radiator.
Wash...
You just put them on top of
yeah,
the dryer.
How do you wash your sneakers? Do you walk
them up
in the washing machine?
I love Converse, so my nice sneaker sneakers, Converse sneakers are always nice and clean. Washer on the radiator, they're dry. Never have to worry about yucky sneakers.
You know, Gina, you sound like a woman who knows what she wants, and you just go get it, which I really admire. That was an excellent call. Thank you, Gina. By the way, I have washed sneakers, too. I haven't washed shoes as shoes. I've washed you've never washed sneakers. You never stepped in anything inappropriate and washed, hello, and washed your sneakers? No?
No, I haven't. Well, I probably have.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, Jennifer says she checks out the bar stools or seats she's been sitting on to make an evaluation of whether she needs to wash things when she gets home. And somebody else said, when I first saw my husband's bedroom when we were dating, there was a big pile of socks in the corner. Mm. He said he tended to just buy new socks rather than wash them.
And she said, he's the guy for me.
Well, she married him, although she said it was a pretty disgusting pile.
That's
I guess
beautiful.
She straightened
it's
it out.
It's a very romantic story, actually.
Yep.
Teresa and Bill Ricca, we have enough time for you, so don't blow it, Teresa. Hi.
Yay.
What's up?
Hi.
Hi
nice
to you.
Nice to hear from you. Well, I guess I missed last week when you were talking about showering less, but
yes.
I don't really believe in showers. Oh. I just use a washcloth at the sink every day. If it's summertime, I am a gardener, so I'll shower more frequently, but I'm like in and out. And when it comes to clothes, like, I really don't, I'm not worried about germs. I'm really more worried about appearance and people judging me. So if it smells fine and it looks fine, it's fine.
Now, Teresa, I can't tell you how upset I am that you missed our show on body washing.
I know.
But if you do the what's it called, wash rag thing, washcloth thing?
Sponge bath.
Yeah, just washcloth at the sink.
But
yeah.
In a moment of seriousness, I've thought a lot about
works
this
well.
In the past. No, it doesn't work
yes, it
well.
Does.
It works fine to dampen the body parts. Getting the soap off
still
the body parts.
Use soap.
You don't use soap?
No, you still have
you
to use
soap,
I'm saying.
Well, how do you get the soap off?
Put the soap on the end of the
washcloth. You rinse the washcloth again, and then you wipe it down again. But you got to start from your head and go down. You can't repeat certain places.
Exactly.
Oh, that's a very good
point.
It's
important to go in order.
You can't go from the top up.
Exactly.
You've thought a lot about this, haven't you, Teresa?
Absolutely. I'm with you, Teresa.
Oh, yeah.
It saves you a lot of time.
I don't like really getting wet.
There you go.
Can you do us a favor? Can you leave your number? Next time we do this topic, we'll call you. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Stick around.
Oh, absolutely. I wish I could talk about this more. People are wasting a lot of water showering every day for like
20
minutes. That's not how they do it in Europe, you know.
We do know that. That top-down advice is excellent, and thank you for sharing that with us, Teresa.
Yeah, you dry out your skin with too much showering. That's what they said.
No, that's not her point.
Never wash your legs or your arms. It's only, as we said before, the bits and pits.
No, but the top-to-bottom thing, her point is there's certain parts of your body you don't want to wash after you've washed other parts of your body.
That's right. You have to do it in order.
Teresa is really on.
We have a complaint.
What is it?
This is to both you and to me.
To both of us.
This person says, I love you both and your show,
however,
but could you please stop talking about bits and pits enough already?
Well, can I tell you, actually, I'm going to give her a little program announcement. Mm-hmm. We're doing Q-tips on Monday from 1 to 2, so we hope you'll tune in. Different parts of your body. 1 to 2, Boston Public Radio, Monday here on the show.
Jim is having a very important relationship with the Q-tips in his life,
so I
understand.
By the way, I was not the only one. You've been here for those discussions.
Okay.
You know
okay.
You have. That's it.
Okay,
thank
we're done.
God.
Thanks a lot for listening
thank
to
you.
Boston Public Radio. We appreciate it very much. You can keep up with us 24/7 by way of our podcast. On Monday, we're hosting a political roundtable with Jesse Mermel and Jennifer Nassour, one Democrat, one Republican. Also, we're going to be joined by the Gaming Commissioner, Chair Kathy Judd-Stein.
Oh, that's
to talk
great.
All about sports gambling, which has just been legalized in Massachusetts. Bradley Campbell's going to be here with the Conservation Law Foundation. He's going to talk about some big projects.
Big issue on the
down
Cape.
Down the
Huge.
Cape that people are fighting about in terms of the environment. The Reverends Ian Monroe and Emmett Price will be with us, as well as Jesse Colbert from the Mass Postpartum Depression Fund will join us to discuss mental health for new parents. I'm so glad she's coming along with Dr. Lena Mital from Brigham and Women's. We want to thank our crew, Zoe Matthews, Aidan Conley, Brendan Deedy, our engineer, John the Claw Parker, and Brian Bell, who's been terrific on the boards for us. Thank you to him. And our executive producer, Jenny Bologna. On-site BPL help from Sai Patel, Evelyn Brito, Brad Lewis, and Angelica Marrero. And also, thanks for everybody who helped make this free coffee thing happen, who came down here to get a free cup on this freezing cold day. Or maybe you just didn't want a free cup, you just wanted to come down here.
Whatever.
We really appreciate people came down here. To
thank
the
you
Public
for
Library
coming down here. We
show.
Appreciate it, by
That's
the way.
Right.
Thank you.
I'm Marjorie Egan.
I'm Jim Browdy.
Thank you again for tuning in. I hope you can tune in on Monday. And meanwhile, have a great weekend and stay warm.